Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Merchandise to help you personalize your home and garden. We're proud to offer a variety of products such as cabinets, lamps, and vases made with bamboo, plantation teak, and other renewable and reclaimed resources. These items are beautiful, durable, and most of all, eco-friendly. So stop by Homescapes Carmel on the corner of 7th and Dolores or visit homescapescarmel.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. If Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler have some good ideas, they can get their hands on the $25 billion in bridge loans, maybe in time for Christmas.
We have a responsibility to the taxpayer to make sure that the dollars that we spent are well invested. They have to show us the plans.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and this time, the House and the Senate and the White House are all on the same page.
I'm Mark Noller at the White House, which says President Bush can support the bipartisan compromise that would funnel $25 billion in loans to U.S. automakers. But to get it, the companies would have to show they will make the changes needed to be viable. The money would come from an Energy Department program and not the big financial bailout fund.
The business plan is due by December 2nd. If it looks good, Congress would reconvene on the 8th to vote on a bailout. The Senate has passed, and President Bush says he will sign a bill to extend benefits to people who've lost a job, some by as much as 3 months. The Dow today lost another 445 points. The NASDAQ was off another 70. Michael Cardillo at Avalon Partners.
There's no bottom in sight immediately, but somewhere along the line, the market will make a bottom. Somewhere along the line, the market is going to realize that it's not the end of the world and that there will be a recovery.
Economic indicators down 0.8 in October. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are leaving people who are losing their homes alone through the holidays. No foreclosures of occupied homes until January 9th, at least. A federal judge has ordered 5 Algerian terror detainees at Guantanamo set free.
This is just the beginning and not the end of the latest round of legal battles over the detainees. And given the direction or the lack of it that the Supreme Court has given to everyone involved, I think we're likely to see more and more of these sorts of cases, no matter what the new administration does when it takes over next year.
CBS News Chief Legal Analyst Andrew Cohen. The Humane Society is suggesting stay away from Petland for a new puppy. Michael Markarian says 21 Petland stores were investigated.
They cannot visit the breeder personally, see how the dog's parents are cared for. Then we do urge people not to purchase that puppy.
Petland disagrees, says every store is provided with humane care guidelines, and they say the report is sensationalism and full of false information. A monarch butterfly gets a second chance after one of its fragile, beautiful wings was broken. Jeanette Brandt in New York State put a splint on it.
I thought, well, you know, I can't make the situation much worse, really. So I tried it, and it worked.
A little glue, some tiny cardboard splints, and now the butterfly's all better and on its way to Mexico.
My sister said maybe it's good karma to help out that little creature.
Fly safe, big butterfly. Here's hoping you don't run into a big hungry bird. This is CBS News.
Between Thanksgiving and Christmas, you hear a lot of messages trying to get you to buy something. Well, this is a message about buying into something. Let's redefine Christmas. Consider giving those you care about donations to their favorite charities in their names and ask that they do the same for you. Your giving will do far more good in the world, and chances are you'll like the way it feels. If this sounds like something you can buy into, visit the website redefinechristmas.org.
Shop early at Office Depot and save smart on the coolest gifts and the hottest technology for the holidays. Office Depot has what everyone wants, like the latest laptops, HD TVs, digital cameras, and more. Plus, check out our huge printer assortment, including the latest wireless printers. This week at Office Depot, trade in your old printer and get a $40 instant savings on the purchase of a new HP printer. Make the smart choice this holiday season with Office Depot, taking care of business. Trade-in offer expires 11/22/08 and is not combinable with other offers or discounts.
Here's some good advice for those of Generation Y who think of the Internet as a backyard fence. It isn't.
Think before you post is absolutely good advice. You know, one expert we talked to likened a video that you post on YouTube that could come back to haunt you later as like getting a tattoo that's very difficult to remove later in life. And if you don't really consider who might see this, what could happen, and really think through the future potential consequences, that could be a real problem.
More on tonight's CBS Evening News with science and tech correspondent Daniel Seberg. A study's been done, the first such national study on this subject, that claims childhood obesity could be reduced by 18% if fast food ads were outlawed on television. Economics professor Michael Grossman at City University of New York says TV advertising of junk food clearly plays a part in the amount young people eat. The study authors did not call for such a ban. They only said it would work. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
A wine is only as good as the vineyards it comes from. Now for Cabot, America's favorite Pinot Grigio, that means grapes grown in the foothills of Italy's Dolomite Alps. And while many great wines come from California, when it comes to Pinot Grigio, the best comes from Italy. There you'll find the perfect growing conditions for creating the award-winning Cabot Collection, where Cabot Pinot Grigio gets its crisp, light taste and full fruit flavors. So when you're looking for truly exceptional wine, choose the Cabot Collection.
The number one Italian wine in America, Cabot. Elevating life. Pompeii International, Boca Raton, Florida.
Do you suffer from cold sores? Relieve One Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment is out to prove how fast it really works. If you suffer from those nasty sores, try Relieve and find out for yourself if Relieve works really fast for you. Relieve is spelled R-E-L-E-E-V. It's easy to find and is in all major drugstores. So if you get cold sores, remember to get Relieve now and keep it ready to use the moment a cold sore attacks.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. If you weren't listening, I'd just be sitting here talking to myself. We got a great show lined up for you. Some excellent people will be joining me. And your calls and comments are welcome all along the way, and especially in the free speech zone in our third and final hour.
What are you trying to do? I don't like music.
Somebody I never met, but in a way I know. Much from a picture show, man dies, but real people lost. What's the deal? This ain't how it's supposed to be. Don't I know aboriginal? Took a trip in power, style, pop style, died as hell. No fangs were screaming, shouting, muscles came with such an out. Demons laying on the ground, new identity must be found. On the left hand for a while, sanity for him.
A little bit later this hour, we're going to check in with California's Lieutenant Governor, Democrat John Garamendi. One of his jobs as Lieutenant Governor is a position on the University of California Board of Regents. And when they met this week, John Garamendi led the charge to block a proposed tuition increase. Now, the downside is it could mean a freeze on enrollment in the fall of 2009. But difficult choices are being made here under very difficult circumstances financially in California, and we'll talk with the Lieutenant Governor about that and other issues, including the special session that will probably produce nothing. That is the governor's call, and it doesn't appear that he can round up the votes he needs to pass any tax increases to help cover the budget gap here in California. Also on the way today, Scott Dick will join us next hour, per usual, our contributor on military and veterans issues. You know, Scott served in the Marine Corps and then went to the Army, where he retired at the rank of major. And during the hour with Scott today, we're going to spend some time with Marine Captain Tyler Boudreau. He served in Iraq. And he's written a powerful memoir called Packing Inferno, The Unmaking of a Marine. And I think his voice will be singular and powerful when he joins us a little later. In the Free Speed Zone, we'll talk about the bailout for Detroit and other issues. You'll be welcome to call. So that's our lineup for today. Ordinarily at this time, we check in with Faz Shakir. He's the research director at the Center for American Progress. But I used my Faz voucher earlier today. As many of you know, all week long, I've been on the Dawn Patrol getting up way too early and doing a show for Air America because their host, Lionel, is on the Air America cruise with some of our listeners and some of your favorite hosts like Tom Hartman and Rachel Maddow and others from Air America. So Faz was on with me then, and it sounded like he was coming down with a cold. So I hope he is... So I want to give you some news from the Progress Report and thinkprogress.org and some comments from yours truly on things that are happening today. And if you want to react, you want to share your view, give me a call. It's a freewheeling open half hour here, and you can check in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And before I dive in, I'd just like to tell you about some progress here at the Peter B. Collins Show. I've been very honest with you, my listeners, about the difficulties we've been having under these economic times to try to keep the show on the air. And many people have come to our aid, and some people with a dollar, some people with 10 bucks, and some people have been extremely generous. And in each case, I'm very grateful. And if you'd like to help, you still can. At my website, there's a tab on the homepage at peterbcollins.com called You Can Help. Take a look there, and any way you can help is appreciated. And if you can't help, you just keep listening. That's fine. Nobody should feel guilty or any kind of pressure. But I do appreciate the support people have shown. And we have a major announcement that I can now tell you will come on Monday regarding a new affiliate for the Peter B. Collins Show in a major market on the East Coast, a very powerful station. And we're really excited about this. I wish I could... break my silence here and tell you all the details right now, but we'll save it for Monday. And if you're listening on the weekend, you can catch the news on our stream at peterbcollins.com. We'll make the announcement Monday about 5 o'clock Pacific time at the front end of the free speech zone. So stay tuned for that. And again, I'm very grateful to all of you who have reached out and helped in many different ways. So to the events of the day, breaking news, Henry Waxman has unseated John Dingell as chairman of the House Energy and yada, yada, yada committee. And I find this progress. John Dingell is an older guy. He is very tied to the past in Detroit. And while he is a good progressive on health care and many other issues, I think it is time for a change. And Henry Waxman is clearly more aligned with the White House and Speaker Pelosi. And as a signal of that, I learned just a little while ago that the White House has tapped one of Waxman's top staff people to come to the White House and be the White House manager of health care reform. And so that shows how serious Obama, Daschle, Waxman, Pelosi are about major legislation in the coming year. And maybe it'll take longer than a year. I don't want to put any kind of sharp expectations on it and have people get disappointed. There's no doubt this is going to be a major, challenging undertaking. But the way things are aligning, I think it's pretty interesting. And Waxman is really the first progressive and his staff person going into the White House, presumably a very progressive person. And I've been looking for that signal, too, because so far we've seen a lot of ex-Clinton administration people. That's understandable, because that's where the experienced Democratic staff people are and cabinet officials. But some of them I have trouble with because they're part of the past, part of the conservative Democratic Leadership Council, part of the discredited economic thought that infected both the Clinton and Bush administrations. And so, you know, I think that this Waxman play is very interesting, particularly for progressives. Other news breaking, we have a second federal judge challenging the Bush administration on detainees at Guantanamo who should have already been released. And I have talked favorably about a Washington-based federal court judge named Ricardo Urbina. He's the one who ordered the government to bring a group of Uyghur detainees, prisoners, to his courtroom so he could release them. And the Bush administration managed to appeal that, and that has not happened yet. But now we have a Bush appointee, U.S. District Judge Richard J. Leon. He has ruled that five men I see. 5 out of 6. It's a case of 6 Algerians who were detained in Bosnia after September 11th. And they've been held at Guantanamo for 7 years without charge. And the judge has ordered that 5 of them must be released forthwith and order the government to engage in diplomatic efforts to find them a new place to live. The landmark ruling is the first by a federal judge who has weighed the government's evidence in lawsuits brought by scores of detainees who are challenging their detentions. So this is important news. As you know, I believe that the barbarism represented by and existing at Guantanamo Bay, Bagram, Abu Ghraib, and other parts of the American Gulag are a deep black mark. And I'm pleased that the Obama administration has pledged and seems to be moving forward to close Guantanamo, to amend these policies, and hopefully we'll see executive orders in the early days of the Obama administration reversing some of the darkest practices of Bush, Cheney, and don't ever forget David Addington. He's Cheney's former legal counsel, now chief of staff. He took Scooter Libby's place when Scooter exited the White House. And David Addington's fingerprints are all over the wrongdoing of the Bush administration on torture, incarceration, the monkey trials in the military tribunal system, and in addition, the wiretapping and also the signing statements. I mean, Addington is the most aggressive pushing for the expansion, the bare-knuckled expansion of presidential power in the Bush administration. Also today, John Boehner, reelected as minority leader in the House, quoted as saying, "I think the Congress is still a center-right Congress." Now, I expect that from John Boehner. He's not really in touch with reality. He is a deep partisan. And it's in his interest to believe that the Congress is center-right. And I believe that while many of the Democrats who've been elected in the last two cycles who've expanded the Democratic majority are not dangerous liberals like me, not true progressives, I think that this is a lot of wishful thinking on the part of Mr. Boehner. And I do believe the country is shifting away from center-right and certainly away from right. People want government to step up to the plate and deal with the very serious problems that are created, have been created, and are the lingering vestiges of Bush policies. And I'm really bugged by the repeated memes in the corporate media, the punditocracy, this repeated idea that this is a conservative country, the electorate is a conservative, Obama's election is a fluke. And here's Matt Bai. He's a good writer. He's a very bright man. Writing in the Sunday New York Times magazine this past week. "It now falls to Obama," he writes, "as it did to Bill Clinton in 93, to pursue a realist's agenda while somehow restraining the forces in his own party. Powerful liberal committee chairmen, sprawling interest groups, who would overreach, attempting to make of the party's mandate something that is not." Now, this really steams me. Bush stole 2 elections, 2 of the closest elections we've seen in American history. And each time he claimed a mandate, and he steamrolled over political opposition, including these wimpy Democrats. And to suggest that Obama, who is no dangerous lefty, he's not a real progressive, he's a good guy, I think he's going to be a great president, I'm going to disagree with him on a lot of issues. And I'm going to do it with love. Because I want to help push him to the left. I want to give him political cover to move to the left. And when we hear these repeated themes that, oh, Obama has to put the brakes on and keep these dangerous Democrats from going too far, frankly, steaming load of crap. You can give me a call if you want to react to any of this. I've got more information to pass along to you in the next few minutes. And just after the bottom of the hour, California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi will join me right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines are open for you at 888-5-PETER-B. listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Protect your investment. Custom painting. Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate. Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What? Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow.
Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz is the number one headquarters for runners. Whether you're a novice or a serious competitor, Central Coast Running has everything you need, from shoes to sportswear. Locally owned and operated by UC Santa Cruz cross-country coach Adam Booth, Central Coast Running should be your first stop before you run. Here's Adam with a tip on running.
When you work out or run lately, have your knees and shins been hurting? How old are your shoes? A year? 2 years? The aches and pains could be your body's way of saying your shoes are toast. Running shoes usually last for around 400 miles worth of wear. If you average a few miles a few days per week, you're going to wear out those shoes in 6 to 8 months. Hi, this is Adam at Central Coast Running. Bring your old shoes in the store so we can see how they're doing. We'll let you know how much life they have left and perform a full gait analysis if it's time for a new pair. We don't want to sell you a pair of shoes if you don't need them, but we do want to help let you know if your shoes are good for you. Stop in and let us help keep you feeling good.
Central Coast Running, located in the Gateway Plaza near the corner of Highway 1 and River Street in Santa Cruz.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
See yourself now, baby. It's not my fault. It used to be so in control.
Our music of the moment from R.E.M. It's called Bang and Blame. Well, if you'll forgive crude language, we've been banged. We've been screwed. We've been effed. By the bankers. By big business. By the Bush administration. And now it's just a matter of the blame game. Fascinating to see what's going on with this begging from Detroit, the bailout that they've asked for. So we've had 2 days of testimony from the big three auto executives. And I am pleased to report that on Thursday afternoon, Harry Reid said they didn't have the votes, pulled the bill from the Senate, and there will be no deal before early December on any kind of support for Detroit. And Nancy Pelosi's got this one right, for a change. She said, until they show us the plan, we cannot show them the money. And I still don't remain persuaded that problems are as dire as the auto executives want us to believe, and that the only recourse they have is money from the federal government. I just don't buy it, and I know it puts me at odds with some of my friends in labor and in progressive politics. But I've been hosed. I feel we've been fleeced. And I don't want to be screwed some more, only to see these people burn through that money and then lay off the auto workers and blame them. And the blame game coming from the White House, Dana Perino taking the podium. And the chutzpah for the Bushies, who caused this whole incredible mess, to say, well, if Congress doesn't pass a bailout for Detroit and something happens, it'll be all their fault. I just find it priceless, breathtaking, and enraging. And now, it turns out the Justice Department is paying the legal bills for Alberto Gonzalez, defending himself from politicizing the Justice Department. Banged again. Dave in Eureka, thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, Peter, I had a question of trivia that I was sure you'd know the answer to, and that is, what two people have obtained the office of President of the United States without ever being elected to either the presidency or the vice presidency?
Well, George W. Bush, that's the easy one.
That's the easy one.
Let's see, Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford, yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I share with you, I think that we're going to have to lean heavily on Obama to move him left, because I think everything is telling him operate from the center. So.
Well, and Dave, I hope people have a certain amount of understanding and patience without putting aside our values and pressing for them. He's got a hell of a load to take on. He's got to build a new government. And yes, he's recruiting a lot of Clinton people, and it makes me uncomfortable. But when you look around Washington and say, where are the experienced Democrats? Well, most of them served in the Clinton administration. The last president we had was Carter. And most of those guys, like Big New Brzezinski, I certainly don't want to bring him back. So, you know, it's going to be up and down. Each day we get new announcements of appointments. And Tom Daschle's not a perfect guy. Mm-hmm. But on the health care issue and with his experience as majority leader in the Senate, I think it's a pretty good move. I don't like his wife, the lobbyist, but that's a separate issue, and, you know, we can't always control people's romantic lives and those interests that develop. So, you know, I'm not completely happy with everything Obama has done to date, but on the critical issues, on Guantanamo, he's moving in the right direction. On Iraq, I think the Iraqis are going to help prod him to do more than he has committed to do. You hear me every day raise questions about Afghanistan, and I will continue to do so in a respectful way. And so this is the role I hope to play going into the Obama administration, being a friendly critic, a left-based critic, working to bring progressive values as often as we can into the mix.
Well, I find him to be a very intelligent person, and I can't help but think that he's figured out the same thing that we have, and that is that there is nothing at all legitimate about our involvement in the Middle East, that it's all based on lies. How do we justify being there next week?
Well, yes, and then we need to continue to press, too, because we're seeing the outlines that Barack Obama is not going to press for full disclosure, investigation, and accountability of the wrongdoing of the Bush administration.
No.
And we've got to keep pressure on there in every manner that we can. This indictment of Cheney in Texas is really interesting. There's going to be an arraignment tomorrow on Friday. And I hope to see a perp walk with Cheney and Gonzalez. They'll probably send lawyers. But
thank you for all that you do, Peter.
Okay, Dave, thank you. We'll take a break and return with California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. We'll talk about his action at the UC Board of Regents blocking a tuition hike. That's coming up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Nick Tanham's taking your calls today, and you can get a podcast at peterbcollins.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by New York Life Insurance Company. Peace of mind can be as close as the nearest New York Life agent. That's why New York Life is the company you keep. And by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech. I'm Charles Osgood. When the California State Supreme Court ruled that the state's ban on same-sex marriage was unconstitutional, it legalized such marriages there. But on Election Day, California's voters approved Proposition 8, which amended the state constitution to define marriage as being between a man and a woman. Now, the state Supreme Court has agreed to hear three lawsuits charging that Proposition 8 and therefore the amended state constitution is unconstitutional. CBS News Chief Legal Analyst Andrew Cohen.
There's no surprise here that these cases have been filed, but it's a little surprising that the California court would agree so quickly to hear and decide this issue just weeks after the election.
More after this. Over 70 million Americans deal with pre-hypertension, but there's a wonderful new product, Emil BP, that makes maintaining healthy blood pressure easy. You take it every day the way you take your vitamins. Emil BP uses a patented, naturally derived ingredient called Emil Peptide, clinically shown to help maintain healthy blood pressure. Keep yours in a healthy range by eating right, exercising, and taking Emil BP. Available at CVS and Walgreens, or visit EmilBP.com to find other fine retailers near you. The most common cause of blindness in people age 60 and over is a chronic condition called wet age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. It begins with symptoms including wavy lines, hazy vision, and blurriness. If you're not seeing clearly, see an eye doctor and get checked out right away, because early detection followed by proper treatment by a retina specialist is key. This message was brought to you by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech. Andrew Cohen says California's high court has apparently something it wants to say on being overruled by the voters.
The question is whether you can, under the state's constitution, take away certain rights by majority vote.
Randy Thomason of SaveCalifornia.com says the answer is in the amended constitution itself.
The constitution has written in it that marriage is only for a man and a woman, and that's what the judges must abide by. The constitution is above the judges.
San Francisco City Attorney Dennis Herrera says Prop 8 was constitutionally flawed.
This measure sought to do something that no other constitutional amendment has ever done here in the state of California, and that is to strip a fundamental right from a protected class of citizens.
Frank Schubert, leader of Yes on 8.
We're respectful, of course, of the court's interest in this matter, and we will look forward to vigorously defending the people's decision before the highest court in the land.
Some opponents of Prop 8 think the Supreme Court should be interested.
People around the country have very strong feelings about the fact that California same-sex couples were allowed to marry and now are not.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on 33 minutes into the hour. California's budget is a mess and getting worse. And the impact on higher education is being felt. We're going to talk about that this half hour here on the PBC Show.
Let the fight to make ends meet. Keep the man up on his feet. Hold it.
turned down his job. Trying to show he can't be bought. Who takes every chance he wants? Make what life's about, yeah.
And one of the people on the front lines fighting to preserve the mission of the higher education institutions, the University of California system and the California State University system, they are distinct and they have separate purposes. And each one of these institutions is in deep financial trouble because of the economic problems in the state of California. And so as we look at this, there are many difficult choices that have to be made. And John Garamendi, as a statutory part of his duties as lieutenant governor, sits on the Board of Regents of the University of California, and I also believe he serves on the board of the California State University System. John joins us now. And am I correct, CSU as well as the Regents, John?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. But okay, that's not a surprise. You're usually right.
I just try to check because we try to be accurate here on the program. And just for background, our program today is heard in Portland and Seattle and Missoula, Montana.
Okay.
And I want people to know that our lieutenant governor has a distinguished past with the University of California. He attended Berkeley and was a football star there. And his commitment to higher education in California has been very clear to me for as long as I've known John Garamendi. And, John, I want you to talk about the important Board of Regents meeting that you attended on Wednesday and the charge that you led to prevent a tuition hike. Now, they're very difficult choices to be made, and I understand that. But part of what you're doing is trying to preserve the core mission of the University of California system.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. But did you say this is heard in Eureka?
That's right.
Those folks up there weren't very nice to my golden bears.
Oh. Quack.
Yeah, I know. They just whooped them. Not very nice at all. Anyway, with regard to the university, the University of California and the CSU system are really the fuel for the economic engine of California. You take a look at the way in which this state has grown, the way in which we've been successful with our economy, the high-tech industry, the biofuel industry, the ag industry, every industry in California is dependent upon these two university systems to produce the highly trained, skilled men and women that we need, whether they are engineers or technicians of all kinds, doctors,
and
lawyers.
And just a friendly amendment, the wine industry is pretty important to me, John.
Did I skip that?
You did.
Enology. Enology at the University of California, Davis.
Right.
Premier enology school in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And a place where they're now making wine at the Mondavi Center.
Right.
Mondavi Food and Wine Center there. The bottom line of all this is that over the last 15 years, the state of California has abandoned, to a large extent, the support for the university systems. And the per-student support has dropped at the University of California from $15,000 per student in 1990 to $9,580 per student in this budget year. And that's before the $60 million cut that the governor wants to lay on top of the previous cuts that were made to this University of California. A similar decline, although slightly less, about 28%, has occurred at the CSU system. Bottom line is we are slowly but very steadily starving the education system. We've also seen a reduction in the K-12 system, all of which means that when it comes time to compete with other states and other nations of the world, California will not have the well-educated workforce. So it is absolutely crucial that we change this, that we restart the support for these institutions. The Regents meeting and the CSU meeting that took place today and the previous 2 days were a very, very important part of that. And it's something that I've been pushing the Regents and the trustees to do, and that is don't put in a budget about what you might expect the legislature and governor to give you, but rather what you need, what these systems need to meet the requirements of an educated workforce. Both systems are doing that. The University of California and the CSU system are asking for about $800 million additional revenue. Half of that is to make up for what was lost over the previous year, and the other half is to catch up with some of the losses that have occurred over the previous 5 or 6 years. Now, Now, recognize that if that money is actually made available by the legislature and governor, it still doesn't get us anywhere near what we need to do in the production of nurses and teachers and engineers and scientists and philosophers and newspaper journalist and radio talk show host.
Oh, gosh. There's no future in those last two trades.
Well, but we still need them. I mean, we really, and this is one of the great tragedies, is that the information that the public needs to know what's going on is not available because the newspaper industry and the reporting industry, whether it's radio or television, they're just not there. Those men and women that once provided us with that news and information are not there, and therefore the general public is ignorant of some absolutely crucial public policy matters.
Yeah, very important. Now, John, what we're looking at here in the big picture is that we are mortgaging the future of California to a couple of campaign or political promises. Promises made by the governor originally, which he's now willing to bury. But we still have a group of Republican legislators who are loyal to Grover Norquist and who are still maintaining their no new taxes pledge. Now, we have a special session that's been convened. It's a lame duck session with the last population of the legislature, not the incoming crew that is seated in December. So a very brief period of time here for the legislature to take action. And in the first few days, there have been some gotcha journalism stories about members who were in China or Hawaii or other exotic locations when we think they should have been here taking care of business. But fundamentally, the governor has called this special session without identifying the votes on the Republican side, his own party, that he would need to make any progress toward meaningful resolution of the problems we have.
Well, you're absolutely right on every score. It's been about 3 weeks now. The governor said, oh, the world is coming to an end. We've got to deal with this. And honestly, there's only been four meetings, all of them less than 2 hours, with the legislative leaders. There's been no floor sessions, no meetings at all among the legislature. The Senate Finance Committee and Budget Committee have not held a hearing on this matter. And the Assembly Committee did hold a hearing and went through it, and then they adjourned, and God knows where they went, but they're sure as heck not in Sacramento. I'm here right now at the Capitol, and the halls are vacant. Nobody's around. And I mean, hey, we got a major crisis. Every day that goes by, it becomes that much more difficult to deal with it because you have less time to raise the revenue and less time to make the cuts.
Mm-hmm.
It is a real dereliction of responsibility. They had a meeting today, the Big Six, as it's now called, because there's actually two Senate leaders. Steinberg will be coming in and Perotta will be leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Lasted about an hour. And before the legislative leaders were able to get out of the hall, the governor was out of the building. Come on. This is just not the way to do it. If we have a crisis, and we do, then you come to the Capitol, the governor, the legislative leaders, the other legislators, you call a session, and you hear what's going on, you discuss, you debate, you vote. If you don't have the votes, you come back the next day and you vote again. And the governor, I'm sorry, you just don't stick around for an hour. You come to the Capitol, you sit there, and you hammer it out across the table until the job is done, including the Republicans. I mean, the Republicans are absolutely wrong on this. The governor's correct. It is a revenue problem. It cannot be dealt with phony accounting, mm-hmm. as they attempted to do in September. You can't borrow any more money, although they're going to try to borrow with the lottery. They call it securitization. You know, come on. That's borrowing against future lottery revenues. No matter how you call it, it's borrowing. And it'll last a year. Okay, we're going to go back to Washington and beg Washington for money to bail us out. Well, they're going to bail out 50 other states, or 49 other states along the way, plus other countries. I don't know, but in any case, that's a one-year solution. What are you going to do the next year? We've got an ongoing problem of some $20 billion. A full 20% of the current state budget is not going to be available next year, beginning in the 9-10. That's July. That's 7 months from now. Hey, these guys have got to get to work. And somebody asked me, oh, you're sure lucky you're not governor. No. I'd be lucky. I want to be governor right now. I want to be sitting in that room. And if I were sitting in that room, I tell you this. They'd be in the Capitol, or else as governor, I'd be on every radio station across this state, every television station, calling them out for dereliction of duty.
And don't you have some bailiffs over there you could send to actually rouse them and make them come to work?
Well, the governor can't force the legislature to work except to embarrass them into working. And you can call the meeting. Say, guys, come on down to my office. You know, once you get in, you can lock them in. You can put sleeping bags on the floor and say, when you get tired, go to sleep, but you're not leaving here until we get this job done.
And the governor, you know, I give him some credit that he has faced reality, and he's moved a long way from where he was even in September in recognizing the nature of the problem and what we need to do to fix it. But he's been spending too much time on photo ops. I don't begrudge him that he went to his climate change meeting. You know, that's an important set of issues. But he's been doing photo ops in airliners and photo ops at different places. And if I were, you know, running his schedule, I'd say, Governor, let's put some of those aside and really get down to work. But the critical issue here is that he does not lead the members of the Republican caucus. They don't respond to his leadership. And I think that this is, unfortunately, a waste of time. And I think that we're going to hit Thanksgiving and then December, and there will be no real change.
Well, I'm afraid you're right. There's 9 days left. Today's session didn't accomplish anything. They say they haven't stopped discussing it, and that's good. But anyway, the governor left town. The governor left town moments after the meeting was done. It was about maybe an hour, two-hour meeting, and he's gone. You can't get it done without really forcing the issue. These are like labor negotiations where you sit around the table until all night long and all the next night if you have to hammer it out. The governor's got to bring in the Republicans. He's got to go out and repeat the message over and over again, as he said once, but as far as I know, only once, that we have a revenue problem. We need to raise revenues. You're correct. He did put the issues on the table. He did say we need a 50% revenue. Well, the current budget, which is what we're dealing with now that has an $11 billion hole in it, $10 billion was cut in the first instance. And that's already, those cuts have already taken place. Now, the governor has recommended about a $5 billion tax increase. Good start. It's also recommended another $5 billion of cuts. Now, you know, my math would tell me that's not 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
That's one-third revenue, two-thirds cuts. A 50-50 would be around a $10 billion cut. The money is there. Fortunately, the governor did recommend expanding the sales tax. It didn't go far enough. Interestingly enough, he did include but he have entertainment, so sporting events, and I guess Disneyland, but he didn't pick up movies. No,
right.
Why didn't he pick up movies?
And he didn't pick up lawyers either.
He didn't pick up lawyers, but you don't have to go with the full 8 cents. You can pick them up at 1-2 cents and begin to broaden the tax to really reflect the California economy.
Mm-hmm.
When the sales tax was started, and as it remains today, it was to tax things, cars, tables, chairs, things. Well, we still buy things, but things have become a hard goods, have become a much, much smaller part of the overall economy, and now it's mostly a service economy. He's got to start it on the right way, put it on the table, and now let's debate what's the best tax, best mechanism. What are the best taxes that we should use? And be very, very careful. You don't want to squish the economy. You want to raise the tax revenue in such a way as to not harm the growth of the economy, and that can be done. I know. I was chairman of the Revenue Tax Committee for 5 years. I understand how this thing can happen, but you've got to negotiate it, and you can't do it in 1 hour, and you can't do it without breaking the Republican gridlock, which is no taxes, no way, no how, never.
And you can't do it when you leave the building early to make your private jet flight to Santa Monica.
That's true, too.
We'll take a break and return with California's Lieutenant Governor, Democrat John Garamendi. You got a question? Bring it on now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA is the radio home of Central Coast Sports. Join us this fall as KRXA 540 brings you the high school football game of the week. Hi, this is Rob Ponce. Join John Berlin and me each weekend as we bring you the play-by-play of the high school football game of the week.
This Friday at 7 p.m., join us for the first round of CCS playoffs. in high school football as the Monterey Toreadors host Leland at Monterey Peninsula College, 7 p.m. Friday.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale. Listen to my show every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. 2 hours of in-depth talk on effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges, whatever the crisis. Addictions, illness, fears, breakups, money problems. I'll bring in the expert guests and we'll do it with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Sun Street Centers. For alcohol and drug treatment, go to www.sunstreetcenters.com.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Williams.
And I'm Melvin Williams.
Check out our new show, Holy Hip Hop on the Block, every Saturday from 10 to 12 noon, right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Check us out.
Slow down, you move too fast.
Hello, I'm Barbara Mossberg. You know you move too fast, and I'm inviting you to join me Sundays starting February 10th to slow down for our poetry hour. Here's the lowdown on our poetry hoedown. Meet me at high noon, and we'll make the morning last right here on KRXA 540. What you know when?
Minutes in front of the hour, the Peter B. Collins Show continues, talking with California's Lieutenant Governor, Democrat John Garamendi. And, John, I don't know if you get to read Willie Brown's column in the Sunday San Francisco Chronicle, but he, of course, spent 28 years in the legislature, a lot of that time as the speaker, and love him or hate him, he certainly knows how deals are done. And he outlined a scheme for Schwarzenegger, just free advice, saying, look, find some of these people who won't be returning to the legislature, these Republicans who are termed out or may have been defeated, and offer them a plum, one of these easy jobs on the Unemployment Review Board or the Solid Waste Management Board, and try to peel off the small number of votes that you need in the Assembly and the Senate. Do you know if the governor's been working on those kind of sweeteners for recalcitrant Republicans?
Well, I would suggest the answer is no. You can't offer a thing of value for a vote. So I wouldn't recommend exactly what Willie has suggested, because it may be the wrong way to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly there are ways in which you can persuade people to vote and to help you with the problem. I think that with the legislature, let me put this in the nicest possible way, if a legislator were to understand the full ramifications of why it's important to vote for the good of the state, for children, for education, for economic opportunities of all kinds, it would be, I think you can persuade people to vote and, mm-hmm. and to help out in solving the problem.
Yeah. And is the sales tax, you think, the only viable way of generating revenue right now? We heard the governor kind of say, well, maybe we could increase that vehicle license fee that I dramatically cut out when I took office. And maybe he's got deep regrets about that. He didn't say the regret part. But, you know, I'm just concerned about the lack of progressivity. And the whole revenue stream for California is so hobbled by Prop 13, overly dependent on capital gains taxes from the very wealthy. And now to increase the most regressive tax, it's not my first choice.
Well, I'm not so sure the sales tax is as regressive as you might think it is. And it's not that way any longer, but it is somewhat regressive. But the governor's suggesting a cent and a half, which I think is far too heavy. I think it will clearly have a stifling effect on auto sales, for example, and maybe other kinds of things that we would want to do. I'd recommend like a half a percent across for that, and a temporary, I think 3 years is okay. But I really think broadening the sales tax, and not necessarily at the full rate. You know, pick up lawyers, accountants, and consultants. Maybe pick up it up at 2% and work to broaden the tax. I think that's very important. And, you know, why not movies? If you're going to tax sporting events, then you ought to pick up movies and the like. But again, you don't have to pick it up at the full rate, but broaden, the more broad you make it, the less volatility you will have. And that's important. I do think the motor vehicle and lieu fee, the restoration, at least partial restoration of it, I think is important. It is progressive and it also is environmental. I think the governor made a very, very serious problem the first hours of his administration. He campaigned on eliminating the car tax. Well, he managed to eliminate any hope that he had to have a budget that would balance over time. The 2 years were lucky. There was a lot of revenue coming in. But every other year, it's been a hole. The ongoing hole is about $6 billion, which is about what the car tax brings in.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
But these are the things you need to sit down. You put all this on the table and you go a little here, a little there. My experience tells me that you need to raise the tax revenue from a lot of different sources. Don't hit anyone too hard, which we've done, and you mentioned the personal income tax. You can even take the corporate tax and make it friendly to small businesses. Right now, there are two brackets on the corporate income tax, $800 to have a corporation, whether you're making money or losing money, mm-hmm. you still pay the $800, and then the top rate, 8.5% for every dollar of profit thereafter. But why not put brackets in there and say for the first $100,000, it's $800, no mm-hmm. more. Or let's say it's $100 to have a corporation. The first $100,000 you make is maybe 1%.
Mm-hmm.
The next up to $1 million, maybe 2 or 3%. And then if you're Chevron and you're making billions, well, maybe you ought to be paying 9.5% rather than the 8.5%. You can make it progressive, really giving an advantage and an opportunity to the new small businesses coming in, or small businesses, whether they're new or not.
I also think an oil royalty tax like the one rejected at the ballot 2 years ago would make a lot of sense with crude oil at a new low, at least in the past year, and gasoline prices hovering around $2. I think this is the time to put that in, not when it's up at $4.50 a gallon at the pump.
Well, there's two different things here. One is Governor Palin, during her campaign, took great pride in Alaska taxing oil as it comes out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Was the one thing I agreed with her on. You know, but California is the only state in the nation that does not tax oil as it comes out of the ground. So I think we ought to do the Palin tax,
mm-hmm.
Put the Governor Palin tax in effect.
Good name. And I like the way you're labeling that. That's good.
And do that one. The governor, Governor Schwarzenegger, agrees with this. That's about $1 billion, $200 million right there.
Mm-hmm.
So you begin building the thing, you begin building your revenues from a broader base. The other is the gallonage tax. This is 18 cents on a gallon of gas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I've been around a little while. The first car I had, I was down in Berkeley going to school there at Berkeley. It was an old Ford, and it was like, you know, 10 years old and in the mid-60s.
And you're not going to tell me that your wife was looking at the street through the floor like Michelle Obama did the other
no,
night?
No. It wasn't that bad. It was bad, but it wasn't that bad. But I'd go down to the gas station at Ashby and
University.
Yeah. Ashby and University, a gas station there. I'd pay 20, 22 cents a gallon for gasoline.
Right.
12 cents of that was tax. More than half of the cost of the gasoline was taxed. Now we're still 18 cents. We've gone from 12 cents to 18 cents. on the gallon of gas. There's a sales tax, to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the reality is that we're not paying for the maintenance of our roads, and we're borrowing money to maintain our roads. Well, you know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense when we really have the opportunity for a few cents here on a gallon of gas to...
John, I got to stop us now. We're out of time, but thank you for fighting for UC and CSU. Keep it up.
I shall. Bye-bye.
All right. John Garamendi, California's Lieutenant Governor, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Coach Dennis about how to get fit and get rich while helping others do the same.
That's right, Peter. You can earn extra money from your home or office on a part-time basis in the health and fitness world. Your health, your body, and your net worth come down to one thing, taking action. Control your own destiny. As an online fitness coach like me, you can begin creating a better life for yourself and your family with better health, more energy, and more financial freedom. Hundreds of other successful online coaches nationwide are getting fit and getting rich and living the dream lifestyle that comes with a thriving internet business. We'll train you and even give you your customers. It couldn't be easier. Get fit and get rich. It's all done part-time, it's all done online, and it's all done when you have the time. Call me now, 702-299-5789. No obligation, that's 702-299-5789. Or visit us online at fitandgetrich.com. That's fitandgetrich.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Bailout with conditions. Car makers have to show their survival plans.
It is all about accountability and about viability.
Another plunge on Wall Street.
We've got stocks trading as hat sizes. There are all kinds of things trading below $10.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Democratic leaders in Congress say Congress will consider a bailout for U.S. automakers before Christmas if they submit convincing plans for restructuring their companies.
Now Detroit has the ball.
Until they show us the plan, we cannot show them the money.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says there will be no $25 billion bailout unless automakers come up with a working survival plan.
This is about taking us to a path of positive viability and accountability.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says executives flying in this week on private jets made a bad impression.
Yes, we're kicking the can down the road because that'll give us the opportunity to do something positive. But that will only happen if they get their act together.
So the bailout is on hold. Howard Ehrenstein, CBS News, Washington.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House, which says President Bush can support the bipartisan compromise that would funnel $25 billion in loans to U.S. automakers. But to get it, the companies would have to show they will make the changes needed to be viable. The money would come from an Energy Department program and not the big financial bailout fund.
Congress responded to appeals from the carmakers and the many people who depend on them. Steve Finley is editor of Ward's Dealer Business, a publication devoted to car dealerships.
For any one of the Detroit three to go down or to experience bankruptcy would be a catastrophe and make what's going on now look like a good day at the jobs fair.
Now this.
How to perform holiday magic. Step one. Go to the Home Depot. See the exclusive holiday collection of stunning pre-lit Christmas trees, ornaments, lawn decorations, lights, and more at guaranteed low prices, now even lower. Step 2. Choose your decorations and create a holiday wonderland inside and out. Step 3. Notice how it all fits nicely within your budget, which is every bit as magical as flying reindeer.
The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help.
An official message from Medicare.
Today I found out that my drug plan's monthly premium changed. So I compared other plans and found similar coverage at a better price.
Now's the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans. From November 15th to December 31st, you can even change your plan. Call 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-MEDICARE. Or visit Medicare.gov and use the plan finder to see options in your state. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Wall Street does not like the delay in help for the automakers. Stocks fell sharply in the final hour of trading. At the close, the Dow was 444 points lower at 7,552, its lowest close in more than 5 years. The Dow is down 47% from its all-time high on October 7th last year. Art Cashin of UBS Financial Services says stock in some companies has sunk to extremely low levels.
The market is trading as though it's not worried about their profitability.
It's worried about their survivability.
The broader S&P 500 fell nearly 7% today to its lowest point since April of 1997. The NASDAQ dropped 70 points to 1316. The bright spot in all this is the price of crude oil. It fell more than $4 today to settle below 50 bucks a barrel.
You have to go back 3 or 4 years now at this point to see gasoline and crude oil prices at these levels.
Analyst John Kilduff says we're looking at the silver lining in the cloud.
The good news is that crude oil is down below $50 a barrel and gasoline prices are plummeting, but they are, unfortunately, a reflection of really a dire economic outlook.
The national average for gasoline is close to $2 a gallon now. Another blow to the Bush administration's treatment of suspected terrorist fighters. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports a federal judge has ordered the release of 5 Algerians held at Guantanamo Bay.
This is the first time a federal court has freed Guantanamo detainees who've challenged their detentions. They were allowed into U.S. civilian courts thanks to a recent Supreme Court ruling which expanded the rights of so-called enemy combatants being held without charges. One of the 5 men ordered released is Lakhdar Boumediene, who initiated the case, which led to the landmark Supreme Court decision.
The Algerians were captured in 2001. Barack Obama's designated chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, went to Capitol Hill today. His mission? Reaching across the aisle. Emanuel met with Republican leaders to tell them the president-elect needs their help. Chicago businesswoman Penny Pritzker, who raised millions for the Obama campaign, issued a statement saying she is not a candidate for Commerce Secretary. There were reports she was under consideration. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Between Thanksgiving and Christmas, you hear a lot of messages trying to get you to buy something. Well, this is a message about buying into something. Let's redefine Christmas. Consider giving those you care about donations to their favorite charities in their names and ask that they do the same for you. Your giving will do far more good in the world, and chances are you'll like the way it feels. If this sounds like something you can buy into, visit the website redefinechristmas.org.
Shop early at Office Depot and save smart on the coolest gifts and the hottest technology for the holidays. Office Depot has what everyone wants, like the latest laptops, HD TVs, digital cameras, and more. Plus, check out our huge printer assortment, including the latest wireless printers. This week at Office Depot, trade in your old printer and get a $40 instant savings on the purchase of a new HP printer. Make the smart choice this holiday season with Office Depot, taking care of business. Trade-in offer expires 11-22-08 and is not combinable with other offers or discounts.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Every week about this time, we set aside an hour to talk about military and veterans issues. And this is that hour. You can join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. Scott Dick is our officially tapped advisor and consultant and contributor on military and veterans issues. He served in the Marine Corps and then jumped over to the Army, retired at the rank of major, and he is now a talk show host on our flagship radio station, KRXA 540 in Monterey. Scott, welcome.
Thanks, Peter. It's always a pleasure.
Mine, too. And a couple of things I want to work over with you today. The new report on Gulf War Syndrome. I want to talk about the wrangling in Iraq over the what we would call a SOFA deal, a status of forces deal, but they're calling the Yankee Go Home deal. Actually, it's called the withdrawal package, and we'll discuss that. And then later this hour, we're going to be joined by an Iraqi veteran, a Marine captain, Tyler Boudreau. And you and I have, I think, read the whole thing. I've read much of his powerful memoir called Packing Inferno, The Unmaking of a Marine. And we'll hear some first-person accounts of his service in Iraq and what it did to him coming up a little bit later this hour.
But, Scott, I was pleased is not the right word, but it's kind of a relief after so many years to get an official report saying that Gulf War Syndrome is not some delusion on the part of nearly 250,000 soldiers who served there, who came back with symptoms that defy explanation in some cases and don't fit neatly into medical diagnoses. But a report was issued earlier this week and flatly states that there is a Gulf War syndrome and that these veterans deserve not only respect when they report health difficulties, but also services to deal with the legacy that they carry for their service in Desert Storm.
This is one more tragedy foisted on the veterans of the United States of America fighting its nation's wars. And it's really bothers me, Peter. I remember when I was at Fort Carson and their initial reports started to dribble in, and the common wisdom was that these soldiers were malingerers, and so we just, you know, put our heads down and drove on, even though they were the sickness was popping up all over the Army. And when it broke for me, it was when I was reading an account of an Army infantry airborne full bird colonel who had Gulf War symptoms, and they were accusing him of, and all of those soldiers, of being malingerers or trying to milk the situation. And I thought it was incredible that an infantry colonel, a full bull, an airborne ranger, that would be the last thing that would be on his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it was ridiculous, and they've always fought it. I remember at one point President Clinton ordered us to go through all of our file cabinets and to find everything that had to do with anything with the Gulf War. So we did.
Mm-hmm. And so why would it take 17 years, Scott, for them to come to a conclusion like this? Was this intentional obfuscation in an effort to either deny the causes that might have led to a lot of lawsuits, I guess, against the government, or to deny services to these individuals just out of a callous effort to keep costs down?
Well, I think the latter, not the former, because you have to get permission to sue the government. So it's a very, you know, you have to file a claim and it has to be denied. Then you have to get, you know, you have to file suit, and that takes money. And one thing a sick veteran doesn't have is money to do that. So I think it's just a cynical effort to keep the cost of medical care down in the VA system. And, you know, if a few of them pop off, then it's that many less, that many fewer they have to take care of. It's just cynical, Peter. It's the denial, for example, the denial of any kind of financial support for the veterans, the Filipino veterans from World War II, and how long did it take for Agent Orange? And they never acknowledged that, you know, you could just go down the list over and over and over again. And it really doesn't seem to matter what administration it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's an inherent defect in the Veterans Administration that the guy takes the helm and he's told, he takes a secret oath to screw over as many veterans to save as much money as he can, or what. It's just been abominable.
Yeah. So James Binns, B-I-N-N-S, is the chairman of the Research Advisory Committee on Gulf War Syndrome. And he appeared on the public television news hour earlier this week. And vets who want to read the transcript or actually see the video of this can go to pbs.org. And you got to search pretty carefully, enter Gulf War Syndrome and November 2008, because there are multiple stories on the news hour over the years about this subject. But I recommend that you take a look at it, because it's a fairly lengthy interview. And they go into some detail about this, and I think for those who have concerns, family members who want to learn more about the potential causes of these health conditions, there's a lot of good info there. And, pardon me, coughing a little bit here. Scott, take over a second. I'm going to drink some water. I'll be right back.
Okay. Well, the idea that anybody should become informed not only on the battlefield, on the disease itself, because you might run into a veteran that has that sickness, you might talk to somebody, you might know somebody, but also it gives a fascinating insight into what our government is capable of, and that is just ignoring our sickest, most vulnerable population who did what our country asked them to do, and then they get kicked to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
It's disgusting, and I'm not surprised, and, you know, it's really amazing how every administration has just come forward and just tried to save money on the backs of veterans. They don't care about spending billions on something as stupid as Star Wars, but veterans, forget about it.
Well, and in this report, James Binn said that the allocation for research into Gulf War syndrome has been reduced to $5 million a year. Now, across a population of up to 250,000 affected veterans, that's just downright insulting, Scott. I mean, we blow more money on paper clips and, the government wastes money on so many things. And this is a critical issue, and it's a debt that we owe to the service members who followed Bush into the desert.
I know, Peter, and I'm surprised that somebody like Colin Powell hasn't spoke out a little bit more strongly on this. But, you know, he was part of the whole Department of Defense that wanted to say that this wasn't an issue and it was isolated and some of these were stress. And remember all that stuff?
Yeah.
I remember all that stuff.
Oh, they tortured the issue to try to blame the vets, say, pre-existing conditions, it's in your head, we don't acknowledge this, you're crazy. And now the study, it doesn't completely satisfy me, but what they say is that the two general causes that they have found are the pills that were given to soldiers and they were required to take that was intended to protect them against nerve gas attack and pesticides. And I'm going to try to pronounce this. It's pyridostigmine bromide. Maybe that G isn't pronounced, but that's what's in there. P-Y-R-I-D-O-S-T-I-G-M-I-N-E. Pyridostigmine.
That was a stuff. I think that's like D, kind of. That's the stuff they had everybody sprinkle on their bodies to keep the fleas that they were worried about, all those, you know, bubonic plague and stuff that they would get, and mosquito-borne illnesses. And so they poisoned them with the poison that was meant for the insects that would poison them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they gave them an untested, and this is the part that really bothers me, and one of the reasons I was racing to retirement to beat the anthrax shot that I knew was going to come, the series of anthrax shots that was going to come my way, is that it was an untested, I like the way they put this, an untested cocktail of drugs.
Mm.
And so when they had a big test platform, and they do it with a completely straight face. Well, immunize all these troops, and then we'll monitor them, and then we'll get a real readout if it's effective or not.
Yeah. Now, Binns went on to say that there were other causes, possible causes, and it included low-level nerve gas exposure. Is there any evidence that nerve gas was present in the combat zones of Desert Storm?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
They had a couple of Czech chemical companies. I mean, you can imagine right after the wall came down, we had the Czechs in the Gulf War with the Gulf War I. And they had all these repeated cases of not only the Czech chemical detectors, but our own chemical detectors. Think of a box about the size of a milk crate. And they would set them out around the troops, these chemical companies that were defense chemicals. They weren't offensive chemical companies. And they would go off. And they rang so much, the commanders finally told them to take the batteries out of them.
Wow.
And the Czechs, they reported hit after hit after hit after hit. Their alarms would go off. And the leadership just decided to ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's and of course then there was a huge fires where they disposed of a lot of ordnance and may have inadvertently, to use air quotes, burned some of that sarin and, you know, those kind of toxic nerve gases. And that stuff doesn't immediately combust. There's a lot of stuff that just floats in the air. And if you're in the downrange of it, they have a special name for it, downwind. Something, downwind funnel.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can get it just by walking around. So low level, enough to not make you fall over dead, but to just make you sick, and then combine it with all this cocktail, it's pretty amazing.
And a couple of quotes here from James Binns. What we don't have as good data on is how many troops were exposed to low-level nerve gas, for example. So we can't say with the same degree of certainty. The same goes for oil well fires. We do identify both of those as exposures which can't be ruled out or in. Many other exposures that were also happening in the Gulf at that time, depleted uranium munitions, anthrax vaccines, special paints and solvents that were used, we do say that the evidence does not show that they were significantly connected. Now, that's kind of bureaucratic language, but they are attempting to eliminate depleted uranium, anthrax, and paints and solvents as causes here. And I'll have to take their word for it, But I'm one of those people who believes that DU could be a key source of Gulf War syndrome.
Yeah, Peter, you know, whenever they start to, I think they eliminate the most costly antidotes first, like the DU, for example. That means they have to redo a complete set of battlefield weaponry that they don't want to redo.
Yeah.
Stuff is really effective, mm-hmm. as long as you're not anywhere around it.
Very well put. Scott Dix with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll take a break and return. If you'd like to join us, lines are open at 888-5 Peter B. Iraq veteran Captain Tyler Boudreau of the Marines will join us in about 10 minutes. And between now and then, we're going to talk about the deal with Iraq and the way Iraq is dealing with the deal. That's next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Hal. Join us on KRXA 540 for the Cal Bears men's basketball team on Thursday, November 20th. Tip-off is at 7:30, pregame at 7:10 p.m. The opponent, Texas Pan American.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero & Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Peninsula Gem and Jewelry in Monterey is like no other store on the peninsula. 30 years family owned and operated, Peninsula Gem specializes in finished jewelry, jewelry repair, and custom design. Supplying tools and materials for the jeweler and lapidarist from precious metals to cutting materials. Check out the spectacular Monterey Jade and other collectible minerals. Great gift ideas too. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry is at 2245 North Fremont Street, right next to Big Five in Monterey. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. In King City on southbound 101 at Walnut Avenue, there is an injured dog hopping around in the road. A CHP unit is on the scene there. Taking a look at the Hollister-Gilwer area, we have two traffic hazards right now. The first one is on southbound Highway 85 at Bernal Road. There is a bucket in lane number 3, so watch out there. On Route 25 at Wright Road, there are a pile of tires in the westbound lane. In weather, tonight is partly cloudy. Lows will be in the 40s. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming mostly sunny. Highs will be in the 60s tomorrow. Sunset is at 4:55 p.m. tonight. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a fantastic afternoon and stay with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yeah.
the Peter B. Collins Show, talking military veterans issues. Springstone there here on the PBC show. We continue with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans issues. Scott, you and I have been talking about SOFAs so long that we should own a couple by now. But Status of Forces Agreement spells SOFA in military parlance. And the deal with the government of Iraq to extend the U.S. occupation beyond the expiration at the end of this year is apparently moving forward. But it's a bumpy road there in fledgling democracy in Iraq. New York Times reporting on Thursday that a brawl halted a session of parliament as they were debating what they call the withdrawal deal and what we call a status of forces or extension of the occupation. And I've pointed out that it's ironic to me that the Iraqis are actually pursuing this in a democratic way. But the Bush government allowed Ryan Crocker, the ambassador, to sign the agreement. And no legislative body, the House or the Senate, will be asked to review this on the American side. I found that highly ironic.
Well, that's the nature of the SOFA agreement. They're normally negotiated at the embassy level. It's not a big treaty deal. It's more like an amendment to a treaty.
Right, but see, they're trying to call this a SOFA deal when it really is the end game, whether you want to call it an armistice or, the White House is now saying that this amounts to a declaration of victory.
Well, Dana Perino said it yesterday that this is part of the declaration of victory. So, Peter, get your parade duds out because we're going to start having that victory parade down Times, Boulevard.
Yeah, well, they budgeted $25 million for it in 2004, so that money should still be sitting there and maybe it's earned a little interest.
Yeah, they spent that for first-class travel for general officers. It's amazing. It's the Iraqis wouldn't have it any other way but to get us out of there. I don't know what the brawl was about,
the Sunnis. The Sunnis are piping up and saying, wait a minute here.
Well, if I was a Sunni, I'd be scared, less.
Yeah.
I'd be thinking about emigrating to a more Sunni-friendly neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know that Abraham Lincoln, for example, he was an enforcer in the Congress, and he used to regularly get into scrapes, fistfights. Not fistfights, wrestling, because he was an expert wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like fistfighting because he was a big guy, so he just wrestled him to the floor. That used to happen in our Congress all the time. As long as there's no gunplay, it's... Sometimes new fledgling democracies, they got to settle stuff with a fist. So remember the caning during the slavery debates.
Well, in Australia, they allowed legislators to drink until the 1930s when it was banned.
Yeah, laws made, So the SOFA, the aspirational timeline, that's what I love about this administration. They are experts at fuzzing it up. At one end of their mouth, they say one thing. At the other end, they say exactly the opposite. You don't know whom to believe, what to believe, but we know that we are not leaving defeated. We are leaving with honor and as victors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nobody has defined from the day one what victory or winning was going to be like, or what it was going to look like, what the end state was, what the actual mission accomplished, the mission statement, the commander's intent, what it said. But it's easy for, 120-pound communications secretary for the president to go out there and say, it's part of our celebration for victory. It's like ridiculous. And I know they think we're that stupid.
Well, she's a very pretty woman, and she tells a lot of pretty lies.
Yes. I mean, we know that they think we're that stupid, and they'll continue to say this stuff when, as I said with you earlier in the week, when we leave, because the Iraqis want us to leave, then they're going to settle these scores with the Sunni, And unfortunately, a Democrat will be president, and so all the right-wing hate radio talkers will talk about how President Obama lost the war in Iraq.
Yeah, we cut and we ran.
That's my prediction, so I'm telling everybody, don't remember all these victory speeches the Republicans in the White House are giving right now.
Yeah. We'll take a break and return with Scott Dick. We're going to be joined by Marine Captain Tyler Boudreaux. He's got a powerful new book out about his service in Iraq. It's called Packing Inferno. That's next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Still looking for the magic bullet. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Once again, everything's turned on its head. Up is down, down is up. Yesterday we heard consumer prices were dropping, which is great news, except when it isn't. Because now we learn that dropping prices mean deflation. We've all been taught that inflation is bad, but it turns out that deflation, which we weren't taught about, is worse. Last time we had price deflation was the Great Depression. Unemployment claims today were the highest in 16 years. And after 2 days of hearings on whether to save the auto industry, what's the big headline? That the CEOs flew their corporate jets to Washington. That's what spiked the deal. If only they'd showed up wearing dirty jeans and pushing wobbly shopping carts, they'd have gotten the money. But now, the Senate won't even hold a test vote. So, here we are, still trying to find that magic bullet. The problem is that when you're standing in a circular firing squad, even a magic bullet can hit you in the foot. So, here we sit, out of money, and even worse, out of ideas. I mean, an economist actually said during those hearings that car sales would be better if the auto industry had built crummier cars.
The vehicles are too good. They make them too well. They don't break anymore.
Like my minivan.
Like my truck.
Too many well-built cars. We've invented an economic system that actually punishes competence. What do you do when the cars are so well-made they refuse to break? Wait, I've got it. We hire car thieves to go on a massive car theft spree. Then people would have to buy new cars, and they could use insurance to pay for them and wouldn't have to touch their savings. Well, it's no dumber than anything else I've heard. Now this.
A wine is only as good as the vineyards it comes from. Now for Cabot, America's favorite Pinot Grigio, that means grapes grown in the foothills of Italy's Dolomite Alps. And while many great wines come from California, when it comes to Pinot Grigio, the best comes from Italy. There you'll find the perfect growing conditions for creating the award-winning Cabot Collection, where Cabot Pinot Grigio gets its crisp, light taste and full fruit flavors. So when you're looking for truly exceptional wine, choose the Cabot Collection.
The number one Italian wine in America, Cabot. Elevating life. Bombay International, Boca Raton, Florida.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz is the number one headquarters for runners. Whether you're a novice or a serious competitor, Central Coast Running has everything you need, from shoes to sportswear. Locally owned and operated by UC Santa Cruz cross-country coach Adam Booth, Central Coast Running should be your first stop before you run. Here's Adam with a tip on running.
With summer pretty much over, the days are getting shorter, but that doesn't mean your runs have to. This is Adam at Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz. Stop in the store and check out our fall and winter gear. We've got bright, reflective nightlife accessories and plenty of warm, soft winter apparel. Stick to your usual running and walking routine. Don't let the changing seasons slow you down. We'll have a nighttime run series with free gear for runners and walkers, and we've got plenty of advice on how to be safe and warm. Get on our newsletter list and drop in for more info. As always, we offer a free gait analysis to find the best shoe for you. Stop by Central Coast Running and let us keep you going this fall.
Central Coast Running, located in the Gateway Plaza near the corner of Highway 1 and River Street in Santa Cruz.
Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma-and-pa prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15. For extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out. And catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
Live.
live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
This half hour, we explore what it means to be a Marine serving in Iraq. I want to take you back to a weird song from the 60s called What is a Marine? It's Ernie Maresca.
Between the security of childhood and responsibilities of adulthood comes the fascinating group of humans called Marines. They come in all sizes and shapes and uniforms and can usually be found on ships and bunkers, embassy duty, in love, in bars, in jail, or in debt. Towns tolerate them and the government pays them. A Marine is a brave man with a tattooed arm, deadly with a deck of cards, an occasional drinker, a defender of our country with a Playboy pinup in his pocket. A Marine has the slyness of a fox, the energy of a bull, and the appetite of a bowery bum. He dislikes answering questions.
We'll fade it here because Ernie never actually gets around to singing. He talks his way through the whole tune. And I want to honor two Marines with me here right now. Scott Dick, who is my co-host every week for this important hour on military and veterans issues. He served in the Marine Corps and then over to the Army, where he retired at the rank of Major. And Captain Tyler E. Boudreaux joins us now. He is the author of Packing Inferno, The Unmaking of a Marine. And Tyler, we welcome you to the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Scott and I are both very impressed with your book and the narrative and the personal descriptions that you offer of your service. And I thank you for the service, and I thank you even more for the book.
Thank you.
And Scott, why don't you tell Tyler your reaction to Packing Inferno?
Well, Tyler, I told Peter I thought it was the best piece done on war since Philip Caputo's A Rumor of War. And I understand the Pop-Tart story. Completely. I was a jarhead. I was in 3-9, and we evacuated Saigon to 75, and then went to Bosnia 20 years later. That was my two big deployments. Uh-huh. But I understand the Pop-Tarts, and it cracked me up. And
Now we're going to have to tell the Pop-Tart story. You want to do it now or later, Scott?
Well, it's not going to mean anything to anybody.
I think we need to explain what it is. So, Tyler, tell us briefly the Pop-Tart story.
Well, in Iraq, there was we have these meals ready to eat. They're these bagged, military meals that they're good until the year 2100. And you can eat them in space and whatever. And surprisingly, they don't taste very good, but they have one dessert, the Pop-Tart, which comes in one out of 24 selections. So if you get this particular meal, you've really hit pay dirt. And for me, I became very attached to the Pop-Tart and actually it sort of became a place of or a source of mental refuge for me. I would stash away this Pop-Tart and I would wait for the proverbial rainy days, because there really weren't that many actual rainy days in Iraq during the summer. So we were at a place we called, sort of a nickname we called Camp Suicide, because there was always rockets and mortars being shot. It was a little old construction yard, and we had about two-thirds of a battalion stuffed into this yard. So it was, pretty dangerous. And one day I went to have my Pop-Tart, which I was just, really looking forward to, like you can't believe. And we started to get rockets and mortars in, and so I threw my Pop-Tart under my chair, and I ran for my gear, and we all sort of took cover for a few minutes. And when I got back to my chair after it was all over, the Pop-Tart was gone. And I became pretty angry about this. And I searched my pockets. I searched under the chair. I looked everywhere. And really, in the back of my mind, I knew what had happened. Somebody had stolen this Pop-Tart. This is a highly coveted item. And I was really upset about this. So I started searching the faces of the other Marines around me, looking for the telltale crumbs on their lips, looking for that smile that only a Pop-Tart could produce, these sorts of things. And I couldn't find it, and I was really angry. I'm going to have to obviously avoid the things that I actually said, but a major walked up to me, and of course I was a captain, and he said, "Hey, what's wrong, Tyler?" And I said, some guy, they stole my Pop-Tart, and I swear if I catch him, I'm going to kick his butt. And he looked at me and he said, "Ha, was that yours?" And I think that sums up so much
of being in Iraq, and it sums up not so much their book, but Peter, the reason I said nobody was to understand this, Tyler, I got a note from the publishing company when they sent me the book, and I think you'll find this. Most people aren't going to get it either, but you will. Hi, Scott. Peter B. asked me to send this to you in anticipation of Tyler's appearance on the show on 11/20. Yeah. Enjoy.
And it's not a book that one would enjoy. I think that it's fascinating, it's riveting, it's revealing, and it's very personal, Tyler. Tell us what motivated you to really keep notes or keep information, a diary or some sort of narrative while you were in Iraq, and how tough was it to take that information and put it into this powerful book?
I guess that kind of ties into the title, Packing Inferno, which was a result of me inadvertently packing the book, Dante's Inferno.
Mm.
I had packed a bunch of books, and I hadn't planned to pack that one, but when I got to Kuwait and opened my sea bag, there it was. And, you know, they say war is hell, so I said, okay, well, I guess I'll read it. So I was reading that as we traveled from Kuwait up into Baghdad, and I was just really kind of struck by all these similarities, the parallels between my journey and the journey of Dante and Virgil through the nine circles of hell. So I started to just sort of jot things down, take notes, and just sort of in journal format and miscellaneous notes. It wasn't anything very formal. And what I found by the time I left Iraq is that the metaphor had sort of transferred from war being hell and this inferno book being in my bag, but the inferno moved into my head, and I was sort of not able to get the war out of my head. Even coming home, even in my house, I was really swimming in the details, and so that's how the title came about. And I just started writing, and I wrote and wrote and wrote, and as I kind of described in Packing Inferno, the first iteration of this was this novel. And the reason I mention it is because, you know, it was huge, and it was, you know, it was terribly written. It was really an awful piece of writing, but what's important about it was that I was getting out all of these, you know, sort of fragmented feelings and fragmented observations. And the other kind of interesting thing about it is that I wanted it to be fictional at the time because I wasn't ready to say, this is what happened to me, this is how I, you know, saw it, this is what I feel about it. I wanted it to happen through characters. And then over time, I sort of evolved into a place where I could say, no, this is me, this is Tyler Boudreau talking, and I need to make this the first person. And so in the revision process was key, not just that I was fixing sentences and paragraphs, but that I was really sort of coming to terms with these emotions that I had first jotted down.
Well, Tyler, I have I want people to read this book. I want people who are interested in military history, who are interested in the war in Iraq, and I want them to shove it over to their civilian friends, the kinds of friends who have kept their distance from the war in Iraq, from the casualties, from the mindlessness of it all. And one of the things I find most compelling about this book is that you don't really pull any punches, do you? I don't see you or reading anything where you've actually self-censured. And I know you had an interest of, you know, brevity, had to leave stuff out. But it looks to me like you've really called this war play-by-play, and you're the color man.
Yeah, I really try to lay it as clearly as I saw it, but I think what you'll notice is that I don't make the Marine Corps just a punching bag. I'm not really looking to say that the Marine Corps is a bad organization. What I try to describe to people is this is what it is. It's a fighting unit. They're serious about combat. All right, and I try to put that, the nature of the Marine Corps, and its institutional nature too. I mean, look, it is an institution. It's a big one. And it's got bureaucracy and it's got institutional problems. And I say, look, these are the things that it is. And put it in the context of Iraq and describe how that plays out. And I just want people to understand that in kind of a real sense, without the mythology.
Well, and you give us the full story, complete with your feelings. And, you know, I don't want to make you out to be some kind of wimp who's too sensitive and, you know, singing Morris Alpert songs in your head. But you really describe honestly the conflicts that you feel as you pick up a weapon for the first time and engage in combat. You talk about the feelings that you have in different situations about your comrades, about your commanding officers. There's one story you tell about collective punishment, where I don't remember what the infraction was, but for 2 or 3 days, you guys were, digging dirt and, told you couldn't talk to one another.
That's right.
And, that seemed like grade school to me. Yet I do understand that trying to maintain cohesion in a unit under combat circumstances can be very difficult and challenging to the command, and also it produces wacky behavior from the grunts.
Yeah, I think that what you find, what I found in the Marine Corps is we became very good at training ourselves for conventional battle and building that cohesion and developing ourselves as tough individual Marines, but also as tough units that could really endure through things. And I think that if we ever have a situation where we need that kind of force, the Marines are going to be great. What the ethos of the Marine Corps and the training of the Marine Corps does not really apply so well to is this, this very non-conventional, civil military situation in Iraq with this counterinsurgency. And the reason why it didn't play out so well is because, for one thing, we were very centered on fighting in the Marine Corps. That's what we are, fighting in. I keep on sort of harping on this, but it's important because when we got to Iraq and we were very, very specifically and adamantly told, look, this has got to be about winning the hearts and minds of the people. It's not just a slogan. Really, this is what we're trying to do. So we were out there trying to build clinics and schools and bring medical supplies and these sorts of things. We were trying, legitimately. But what happened is that whatever humanity that we were trying to show the Iraqi people was very quickly overwhelmed by a desire to survive, because we didn't know who the enemy was, and so, you'd get hit from the darkness and hit from the sides of the roads, and so you'd wind up being suspicious of everybody, and eventually you'd end up really hating everybody, angry, hating or angry or frustrated or whatever the emotion you want to call it, but desiring to survive, angry that your friend has just been wounded or killed. And then there's also that tradition of fighting and killing, and that kind of comes into play too, so it just doesn't really fit very well.
Well, for a rough, tough fighting machine like the Marine Corps, I was especially humored by your CG's wave tactics.
Right.
I studied civil military affairs and did that in Bosnia, and it didn't work with them either. And shooting war with them.
What's a wave tactic for the uninitiated?
Well, okay, so General Mattis was my was 1st Marine Division commanding general, and my battalion fell under 1st Marine Division at the time. And he, this is the beginning of 2004, and the insurgency had sort of just crept up over the summer of 2003. And General Mattis was pretty concerned with the conduct of the Army at the time. He had been, he sort of said, look, the reason we have an insurgency is because the Army has been mishandling the Iraqis. He was concerned that they were being over-aggressive, that they had, they were busting into houses and they were killing people at checkpoints and these sorts of things. These are examples that he gave us. And he said, Marines, this is why we have an insurgency, and the Marine Corps is not going to do it this way. We are going to go there and we're going to do it right. We are going to show the Iraqi people that we mean business, and that is to help them, to build a democracy and to build a new country. And I was, hey, I'm on board with this. All right, so that's the background. And he said one of the ways we're going to show them our humanity was we're going to wave at them. Every time you see an Iraqi in the street, I want you to, smile at them and wave. And by doing this is going to show them that we really want to be friends. So as we were driving from Kuwait up to Baghdad, I was hanging out of the Humvee, and with one hand I'm waving, and the other hand I'm pointing my weapon at them. And, it just sort of... Yeah, I'm sure it looks very strange.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break and return with these two Marines. Tyler Boudreau served in Iraq, and his vivid memoir is a must-read, Hacking Inferno, The Unmaking of a Marine. And Scott Dick, former Marine and Army Major, will continue with us. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on northbound Highway 1 at Fremont Boulevard, we have a two-vehicle collision. CHP is on the way. Otherwise, I'm checking the boards, and all the roads and highways are looking pretty clear, so it looks like you're going to have a great commute. And weather, tonight is partly cloudy. Lows will be in the 40s. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming mostly sunny. Highs will be in the 60s. Right now, here are some...
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? That acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years? Or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms, but the actual root causes of disease? At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
For more on the Peter B. Collins Show, a shout out to our weekend listeners on KPOJ 620 in Portland, the Mighty 1090 in Seattle, Progressive Talk KPTK, and our friends too in Missoula, Montana. Great to have you all with us. We continue with Scott Dick, my co-host and contributor on military and veterans issues, and Captain Tyler Boudreau, B-O-U-D-R-E-A-U, Boudreau, the author of Packing Inferno, subtitled The Unmaking of a Marine. It's out in soft cover from Feral House Publishing, and you should be able to find it online or at your local independent bookstore. Scott wanted to lift an excerpt from the book and ask you about it. Tyler, go ahead, Scott.
Well, first I wanted to say, Tyler, that you articulate this transition from peacetime to war, and there isn't any. I know as a young, spindly leg, 130-pound O-3-31, I was a machine gunner. My transition to war, which I didn't go to because they saw the evacuation of Saigon before that, was two boxes of machine gun ammo. That was it. And so it's you articulate that very well. But here's the quote, Peter, and this is always the fear of somebody fighting a guerrilla conflict. And you and I have talked about this over the last couple of years. And he says it beautifully, so I'm just going to read this. It's a couple of lines.
Mm-hmm.
We were cutting down families at checkpoints, blowing down their cities with shock and awe, sniping midnight meanders from afar, trashing out homes night after night, killing hundreds of thousands of people and displacing hundreds of thousands more. We were generating new insurgents faster than we could ever capture, kill, or incarcerate the old ones. Every raid we conducted, however justified, every Iraqi we killed, every city we attacked, every patrol we ran, every detainee we took, every bomb we dropped, however justified, only contributed more strength to the insurgency. That's what I wanted to say.
Very powerful, Tyler.
Thank you.
I want to ask you a couple of questions about Fallujah in the spring of 2004.
First up, I was following it very carefully, and at the time we were getting good coverage on American television. And I will never forget, one evening, Aaron Brown was the anchor on CNN, and he had a general on by satellite from Qatar. And the general was saying that we are not currently conducting any flights, any air raids, any kind of aerial activity over Fallujah. They split the screen, and they cut to a live shot from Al Jazeera, which clearly showed strafing and machine gun fire from helicopters and other aerial assaults on that town in real time.
Yeah.
And Aaron Brown threw up his hands and just said, oh, well. Now, the contradiction was very apparent to me as a viewer. Did you see, I mean, I can't pinpoint the date and the time, so I can't quite use you to contradict the general. But I just want you to know that the reporting over here pulled a lot of punches and left us scratching our heads.
Yeah, I can't remember. I would have to sort of look at the calendar and try to figure out exactly which days were there. We were there right up to the point where we said we're not going to go. And those few days beforehand, we were absolutely using air. I mean, if we were taking fire from a building, we often would call in air and have a 500-pound bomb dropped on it.
Yeah.
So this happened a number of times. Like I said, I can't coincide the dates at this point. But sure, we were using air.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is you go into some detail about your attitudes toward the highly paid mercenaries, the people working for Blackwater, Triple Canopy, and some of the other military contractors. Tell us what the attitude was among you and your cohorts as you saw these people, or at least knew they were there in Iraq performing duties, getting paid 4 to 5 times as much as you, and they were freed from some of the burdens of having to wear the heavy flak gear all the time, and also some of the protocol issues of military behavior.
Honestly, I didn't get that much exposure to them in country. I mean, of course, we knew about them. We knew they were in country. We knew they had sort of, I think at the time they were doing a lot of personal security detachment missions, and I don't know what else they were doing, but I know that a lot of the guys were interested in going there because of that, because of the pay. They're like, well, if I'm going to go to Iraq, I might as well be getting paid handsomely to do it. I mean, and the main reason that I bring them up is just because, well, for one thing, it was the contractors who were killed in Fallujah that sort of precipitated the first siege, and that sort of brought them to the forefront of our consciousness. But also, this idea of a lot of hired guns, in Iraq, we really kind of look upon our service in war with this nobility, and then to bring mercenaries into the equation seemed to kind of cloud that. But then again, I kind of go back in the book and say, but then again, we were getting, a lot of extra pays as well. So there was sort of almost a mercenary quality to our existence there as well.
Interesting. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, for Tyler, what you did know is that those four contractors, there was some literature that came back to the state saying that they really, the pressure from Blackwater to have the Marines, avenge the deaths of the Americans. What most people didn't know until it was exposed was that they were hired as independent contractors on their own with no benefits. And then they were given a mission without the support of the rest of the company. They're supposed to have gun trucks that never showed up. And so they went into Indian country, four guys in an SUV. And so there's a tremendous amount of ill will out there from their family members because they were hired as independent contractors. It's an amazing story of what Blackwater has done to its employees.
Wow.
And Tyler, tell us about life for you since you came back from Iraq.
Well, I got out of the Marine. Well, I came back from Iraq and I assumed command of a rifle company, and we were set to, deploy back to Iraq 9 months later. And it was during that time that I decided that it was not appropriate for me to continue in the Marine Corps. I sort of talk about this in the book. I use the phrase troop to mission ratio, which is not a doctrinal term. It's this sort of made up term that I made kind of created to describe the situation, which was, for an officer or commander, the mission has got to be it's got to come first. It's got to. I mean, that's how you attack a hill or an objective or a beachhead or whatever it is. You know that you're going to lose you know, lose some of your troops, but you've got to, you know, accept that in order to accomplish the mission. All right, so that's basic, you know, military 101.
And I only have about 20 seconds,
okay,
sorry.
So in other words, I came to a point where I really end up loving the troops more than the mission, and so I sort of felt that I was ineligible to command, and I resigned and got out from there.
All right.
That's a huge sacrifice, Peter, he made for his country and himself and his family, by the way.
Scott Dick, thank you very much. Tyler Boudreau, great to meet you.
Thanks
for the book, and I want to recommend it, Hacking Inferno, The Unmaking of a Marine. We've been talking with Tyler Boudreau. Thank you both.
Thank you, Brad.
Share a podcast with this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show with someone you care about. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Here's the deal for U.S. automakers. Congress will consider a bailout next month if they produce plans to show how they'll emerge from this mess as viable companies.
So they show us the plan, we cannot show them the money.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced the proposal this afternoon.
Any money for Detroit is now on hold.
We want them to get their act together.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says the executive's high-end travel didn't help their case this week.
I know it wasn't planned, but these guys flying in their big corporate jets doesn't send a good message to people in Searchlight, Nevada, or Las Vegas, or any place in this country.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Congress wants to know how the bailout money would be used.
We have a responsibility to the taxpayer to make sure that the dollars that we spent are well invested. They have to show us the plan.
So the battle will start again after Thanksgiving. Howard Ehrenstein, CBS News, Washington.
The White House is opposed to using money from the $700 billion financial bailout, but says it supports today's compromise, which would tap an Energy Department fund to set up to promote more fuel-efficient vehicles. The stock market takes another plunge, the Dow down 444 points to its lowest level in more than 5 years.
The nosedive occurred really in the last hour of trading when this, you know, wave of fear just swept into the market, and the losses just snowballed.
CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason.
Wall Street has always hated uncertainty, and it just seems to be everywhere at this point. You've got all the questions surrounding the automobile industry, which are unresolved. You've got the uncertainty over a presidential transition. You've got concerns about the credit markets. You pile all this in together, and the market doesn't have anywhere to turn to for reassurance.
The economic outlook keeps depressing the price of oil. Today it closed below $50 a barrel, a level last seen in May 2005. Analyst Phil Flynn says demand is down sharply.
We have seen the demand for oil change in a way that we haven't seen probably since the oil shocks of the 70s.
It's good news for drivers. In 23 states, gasoline prices are below $2 a gallon now. California is one of the hardest hit housing markets in the country. MDA DataQuick, a real estate tracking firm, says median prices are down 34% from a year ago. But analyst Andrew LePage says sales are up as bargain hunters move in.
About 45% of the homes that resold in the Bay Area last month had been foreclosed on at some point in the prior year.
Mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are suspending foreclosure sales during the holidays. The companies say they'll use the time to decide whether borrowers qualify for a new loan modification program. The Labor Department says new claims for unemployment benefits rose to a 16-year high last week, and economists expect more layoffs in the months ahead. Congress has approved another extension of unemployment benefits, and the White House says President Bush will sign it, even though he's opposed the extension earlier. The price of gold up $12 today to $748 an ounce. This is CBS News.
Nibble, nosh, savor, devour.
Kim, what are you talking about?
What I'm going to do at the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club.
Holiday Taste of?
Sam's Club, where I can sample the perfect holiday meal before I host my own. Lobster ravioli, spiral glazed ham, decadent chocolate layer cake.
Ooh.
Live chef events, too.
Don't miss the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club. Friday, November 21st through Sunday, November 23rd, 10:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Not a member? Join during the event and receive a $10 gift card. Restrictions apply. See club for details.
It's a brand new Thursday on CBS. After a new survivor, it's TV's most watched show, CSI.
What is this?
She left the tiniest clues to some of CSI's biggest mysteries. Now, the miniature killer is back.
Hello, Natalie.
Why did you come here?
A new CSI event, plus a new 11th-hour mystery. One of the military's biggest secrets.
We know what they've been doing to you.
Is about to spin out of control.
Super soldiers are coming.
All new episodes, CBS Tonight.
Ski season has arrived early in the east. CBS News correspondent Dave Barrett reports.
Not even Thanksgiving, and time to strap on the skis.
Oh, blue sky, powder day.
In western New York, it's Holiday Valley's third earliest opening in 51 years.
It's kind of a good omen.
Because
it seems like those are years that we have really good snow.
Jane Eschbach took her first run on
a nice packed powder with a little fresh snow on top.
20 inches of lake effect snow this week didn't hurt, and for some, the chance to go downhill was too strong to resist.
A few kids were skipping school, some with, some without parents' permission.
In this economy, you can save on the slopes.
You ski at night.
And she says,
even though times are tough, you still need to do things for yourself.
Dave Barrett, CBS News.
IntraWest, the Canadian company that operates three ski resorts in Colorado, says it's getting snowed by the bad economy. Business hasn't been this bad in years, and job cuts are in the works at Copper Mountain, Steamboat, and Winter Park. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
How to perform holiday magic. Step 1. Go to the Home Depot. See the exclusive holiday collection of stunning pre-lit Christmas trees, ornaments, lawn decorations, lights, and more at guaranteed low prices, now even lower. Step 2. Choose your decorations and create a holiday wonderland inside and out. Step 3. Notice how it all fits nicely within your budget, which is every bit as magical as flying reindeer.
The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help.
An official message from Medicare.
Today I found out that my drug plan's monthly premium changed. So I compared other plans and found similar coverage at a better price.
Now's the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans. From November 15th to December 31st, you can even change your plan. Call 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-MEDICARE. Or visit Medicare.gov and use the plan finder to see options in your state. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Little GTO, you're really looking fine. Three Pearsons and a four-speed and a 389. Listen to her jacking up now. Listen to her whine. Yeah, yeah. Come on, turn it on, wind it up, blow it out.
Well, they don't make GTOs anymore. They don't make Pontiacs anymore. They don't make Oldsmobiles anymore. And General Motors says the sky is falling, Detroit is imploding, and unless we respond to their extortion demands, that they're going to go under, and it'll be our fault. It'll be the Democratic leaders on Capitol Hill fault. The Bush administration has already said it's not their fault. And I, for one, am pleased that the House and Senate did not succumb to the entreaties from the big three automakers to hand them some cash before they broke for Thanksgiving. On Thursday afternoon, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi held a news conference saying that they don't have the votes to pass a bill right now, and they have demanded that Detroit show us a plan. And if they do, well, Pelosi put it this way, until they show us the plan, we cannot show them the money. And I'm against a bailout if there is one. I want it to have some real strict strings and oversight so that it is a down payment on a move into the future green economy and not simply a way of throwing more good money after bad to back up the status quo. Harvey Wasserman joins me to kick off the free speech on this hour, and I want to hear your comments on this at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. He's a longtime friend of the program, an election protection activist from Columbus, Ohio, and he's also an activist on clean energy. He's the author of the book Solartopia, and he joins us now from the Florida Keys, and he can stay with us until his cell phone drops or the battery dies. Hello, Harvey.
Hey, great to be with you, Peter.
Nice to talk with you. And I want to recognize our friend Karen from Sacramento, who picked up your post about GM, and we're going to talk about that in a second. And she cross-posted it over at Barack Obama's website, trying to get more attention among people who, well, who will be decision-makers and who certainly have a role in influencing the Democratic leaders on this matter right now. So, Karen, thank you for bringing that to my attention. Now, Harvey, you make the case going back historically that GM took away electric-powered mass transit, starting with a very clear plan that they enunciated in the 1920s. And by 1950, we had General Motors constructed diesel buses in most urban areas, most public transit systems. You need to go back that far to come up with a rationale to deny GM a bailout in 2008?
Well, yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the best thing that the General Motors executives could do would be to commit ritual suicide on national television, but, you know, it's well-deserved. But they did. Alfred Sloan, the president of General Motors, formed a committee in 1923 with a famous memo, or infamous memo, targeting the trolley system. He didn't believe that his competition was Ford and General Motors. He believed his competition was mass transit. And they had a conscious plan to wipe it out, and they did, as a matter of fact. Los Angeles had the world's greatest light rail system. Detroit, Columbus, Ohio, every major city in the country. In fact, every city in the country, over 2,500 people had a trolley system.
Yeah, I grew up in Cincinnati, and there had been an extensive trolley system there that was dismantled in the 40s and 50s.
Yes, and with the clear and malicious intent of selling gas-driven, diesel-driven vehicles, primarily buses, but also auto wheels. I mean, if you combine the destruction of the mass transit system in the United States with the construction, the subsequent construction of the interstate highway system, you come up with the greatest ecological catastrophe in human history.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what it was.
And, Harvey, moving closer to the present tense, Detroit killed the electric car just a few years ago. And that's not an overstatement. Here in California, we had a law that required a certain number of either zero emissions or renewable resource powered vehicles, and we had to keep watering that down under pressure from Detroit. And when the electric car was killed, it really did break a few hearts of the people who had leased them. General Motors would not permit people to buy out the leases. They insisted that the cars be returned, scrapped, and destroyed.
Isn't that astonishing? I mean, talk about Luddite-ism. I mean, Detroit's response to the gasoline crisis of the 1970s, you know, was to build giant cars, the minivans, and then their response to the onslaught. Everybody who knew anything knew that hybrid cars were coming on in the 90s, and their response was the Hummer. I mean, you know, you are absolutely right. Detroit, General Motors, the big automakers, need to be taken over by the public. And the public, you know, all these people cry about socialism. Could we do any worse than the management of General Motors? I don't think so. I advocate in that article that you saw, which is posted at freepress.org, that General Motors in particular, retooled to make mass transit, to make the rails and the cars. And they can make buses if they want, but they have to be totally green-powered. I mean, the irony is they didn't have to kill the light rail system. If they left the light rail system intact and use the buses as feeders for the light rail, mm-hmm. It would have been fine. It would have a hybrid system, but they got greedy, and they did tremendous damage to the American economy, to the safety. You know, we're losing 40,000 people a year in the car crashes, to our safety, and, of course, to the health of the economy.
And, Harvey, when you see these high-paid executives who flew their corporate jets to Washington to, as Congressman Ackerman put it, to get off a jet with a tin cup and ask for money.
I like that.
Yeah, it is amazing that they're so tone-deaf and PR shy. Earlier today, I was on a different radio show, and my tongue-in-cheek advice to Rick Wagoner was when they asked him how he got to Washington, he should have said, well, Prince drove me here in a red Corvette.
That's right. And it's not just a tin cup, it's a tin brain.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these guys just don't get it, and they're not going to get it until they're out of the way. I mean, turn over the control of the factories to the workers, to the unions. Let's work in concert to build cars and mass transit. We have no choice. We can't afford to continue with the automobile.
And Harvey,
it's an obsolete.
Harvey, the other day I was talking with Van Jones, who is a fascinating guy, and I put him up in your league as a visionary and a guy who really has a grasp of the future. And he made the case that for about $100 billion invested over a two-year period, we could create 3 million green-collar jobs in this country, and we could give first choice to members of the United Auto Workers and the people who work even in non-union jobs for the parts companies that are the feeders to Detroit's assembly in Mexico and Korea and everywhere else they do it. And if we did that, we would be making a huge investment in the future instead of throwing money at the past. And,
absolutely.
You know, you and I are separated from some of our progressive friends and Democratic leaders. I like Sherrod Brown a lot, and I understand why he's arguing for a bailout because of the interests of labor unions and the people who belong to them. And I'm very sympathetic. I've been a member of the AFL-CIO for 30-plus years, and I don't want to see what I think is coming for workers in Detroit. But if we just try to bail them out and put a Band-Aid on this, we know that the workers will get creamed. We know that the pensions will be taken away, whether they use bankruptcy or not. We know that they're not going to keep paying employer-paid health care. And we know that with a two-tier wage system, they're going to do everything they can to lay off the expensive, older, middle-class workers so that they can hire more young $14-an-hour people on the assembly lines. So
exactly right.
The die is cast, and we cannot. We really can't prevent it with a bailout from the government.
Right, and I feel the same way about the banking bailout, which is already, you know, water down the drain, because these banks should have been taken over. The parameters on investment should have been that there should be no investment made that does not serve the environment in the long-term transition to a solar-topian economy. We have to get off of fossil fuels and nuclear power. I mean, there's two saving graces that this country has for its economic future. One is our diversity, which we've expressed by, electing Barack Obama. And the second is the fact that we have in this country the ability to generate all of our own power. In a solar-topian situation, we have wind, solar, tidal, geothermal, and none of this stuff is abstract anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are still treating it as if it's some kind of alternative energy, but renewables are not the alternative energy anymore.
Well,
it's the old stuff.
The other thing, Harvey, is that if Detroit is going to survive, and this wisdom came from a listener, I won't take credit for it, but he put it in simple terms. If we, give them some bucks, they'll burn through it. But if we, for example, give consumers money to have vouchers or discounts or whatever you want to call it to buy American-made fuel-efficient cars, then we can create the incentive not only to move Detroit into the present and the future, but also to rebuild those companies economically by boosting their sales, not by simply subsidizing their losses.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like giving cocaine to a drug addict so he feels better until the morning. I mean, you know, what we have to do is, I think we should take all that money and pay off people's mortgages and student loans. Have a national moratorium on mortgages and student loans. And then see where the economy booms. I mean, the most effective piece of economic legislation ever passed in the United States was the GI Bill, which, you know, educated our nation. Let's make our college education free, and let's do something about mortgages so people can stay in their homes, and then talk to these bankers. You know, let's take six of John McCain's seven houses and distribute them. You know, although I should call one of his staff people to find out how many there actually are. But you know, this is exactly the wrong way to go with a top-down bailout. And I'm very glad that the Congress didn't do this. And you're 100% right. We need to have public control of these corporations.
Yeah.
And if that's socialism, then you and I are socialists. We got to start thinking in those terms, because if the public doesn't control our own money, what are we going to control?
Right. Well, Harvey, I want to thank you for your advocacy and your passion on this issue. Thanks for interrupting your trip to the Florida Keys to talk with me. And
Listen, you're worth it any time. And, come see me in Solartopia, and we'll get a green-powered Earth. That's what we're going to have. It's the only thing that's going to work economically.
Harvey Wasserman, the author of Solartopia. Check it out at harveywasserman.com. Thank you, Harvey. We'll take a break here and return to your phone calls. My lines are open in the free speech zone. Comment on the bailout or any other issues in the news. Tom Daschle moving into Health and Human Services. Governor Janet Napolitano of New Mexico being named to Homeland Security. Let me know what you think about the building of a cabinet, Obama style. Lines open, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Give me a call.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Baby, quite continental.
Let me tell you about Chavez Jewelry Designs in Watsonville. Have you ever noticed how significant beautiful jewelry can be? A lovely diamond ring, special necklace, sparkling earrings, or a watch can be truly meaningful. When purchasing or repairing precious memories, having a friend in the jewelry business is critical. Chavez Jewelry Designs is your friend in the jewelry business. With Chavez Jewelry Designs, you will find the best products and repair service at the lowest prices. Stop by and check out Chavez Jewelry Designs, conveniently located at 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville's Crestview Shopping Center. Chavez Jewelry Designs is open weekdays 10 to 7. Call Chavez Jewelry Designs at 768-8004. That's 768-8004. A friend is waiting.
Hi, this is Al. Join us on KRXA 540 for the Cal Bears men's basketball team on Thursday, November 20th. Tip-off is at 7:30, pregame at 7:10 p.m. The opponent, Texas Pan American.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on southbound Highway 1 at Fremont Boulevard, there is a two-vehicle traffic collision with an ambulance responding. I'm checking the boards and all other roads and highways are looking clear right now. You should have a smooth commute. In weather, tonight is partly cloudy. Lows will be in the 40s. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming mostly sunny. Highs will be in the 60s. Right now, Monterey is 57 degrees, Salinas is 63 degrees, Santa Cruz is 66 degrees. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. Enjoy your commute. The Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
time for more on The Peter B. Show. We're in the free speech zone. Your calls and comments welcome. Any subject, any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. And if you're listening live right now here in California, I invite you to call. It's winter time, and due to the shift back to standard time, most of our affiliate radio stations are required by FCC rules to power down. And I know it limits the coverage and the reception. So that means if you're listening and getting a clear signal, it's your duty to call in and join us in the free speech zone. You know the number, 888-5-PETER-B. Now, here is a quick clip from the news conference held this afternoon in Washington, where Harry Reid and other Democratic leaders said, no bailout, at least not today.
We've worked hard this week to fashion a bipartisan consensus. No one has worked harder on the Senate side than senators from Michigan. They have a bipartisan agreement, but it's their agreement. Unfortunately, the sad reality is that no one has come up with a plan that can pass the House and the Senate and get signed by President Bush. No matter how hard Senator Levin and the others have worked, and they've worked very, very hard. The main reason is what we've all witnessed in congressional hearings this week. The executives of the auto companies have not been able to convince the Congress or the American people,
like me,
that this government bailout will be its last.
Or that it makes sense.
In light of the importance of this issue to all of us, we have decided the best way to proceed is to give the auto companies another opportunity to make their case. Make their case to Congress and to the American people. We're requesting that they submit a plan to Congress through Chairman Frank and Chairman Dodd no later than December 2nd. These two very able men will review the plan and, if necessary, hold hearings during the week of December 2nd to fully vet the auto industry's proposal. We're prepared to come back into session the week of December 8th to help the auto industry, but only if they present a viable plan that gives us, the Congress, the confidence that taxpayers and the auto workers will be well served.
It is all about
Nancy
accountability.
Pelosi.
And about viability. Until we can see a plan where the auto industry is held accountable and a plan for viability on how they go into the future, until we see the plan, until they show us the plan, we cannot show them the money. And that is really where we are with this. I want to join the chairman in saluting those who have worked so hard on this and add to that our Michigan delegation, for Chairman Toledo, our Michigan delegation in the House of Representatives.
Now, that's an interesting comment there at the very end from Pelosi, because she claimed hands off, but earlier today, the man she just referred to, John Dingell, the dean of the House, been there since 1950-something, he's 82 years old, and he lost a battle for the chairmanship of the Energy and Everything Else Committee to Henry Waxman of Los Angeles, who is a very tough guy and clearly has been tapped by the Obama, Reid, Pelosi leadership to lead the effort through the Congress. And I think that was just a very interesting little sweetener for John Dingell, who lost big today, and I think we all win for it. Chris and Salinas, thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show.
Peter, I was just wondering where Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi were when they're doling out $700 billion for Wall Street. Where's all their concern for the money went or is going? You know, there's no accountability at all for that.
Well, they forgot to ask for the plan before they showed them the money.
Well, exactly. But that aside, you know, I do believe that we need to help Detroit. But the problem is that people are not working. People are out of work. People are afraid that they're going to lose their job, and they're not going to buy a brand-new car. I think that General Motors and Ford put out a fairly decent product, and they get a fairly decent gas mileage. They've made a lot of you know, improvements.
It's true. They
you know?
Do
but
each
they need,
each
they
company
need more.
Each company does have some decent vehicles. The Ford Escape, I think, is a really nice hybrid that was designed and built in Detroit. It's not just a copy of a Toyota.
But if they but
if we truly wanted to get the country back on track, we'd take that whatever's left over of the Paulson money, and we put that into every single infrastructure project in every single state, and put people to work, and give those contracts to medium and small business companies. And those people are going to buy trucks. They're going to go out. They're going to spend the money. They're going to pay Joe, you know, at a sound shop to keep him in business.
Well, I thought you were going to talk about Joe the plumber, and I'm tired of him. Chris, thank you very much. I appreciate your call today. 888-5 Peter B. You can join me next here in the Free Speech Zone. I want to hear your comments. 888-573-8372.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
KRXA is the radio home of Central Coast Sports. Join us this fall as KRXA 540 brings you the high school football game of the week. Hi, this is Rob Ponce. Join John Berlin and me each weekend as we bring you the play-by-play of the high school football game of the week.
This Friday at 7 p.m., join us for the first round of CCS playoffs in high school football as the Monterey Toreadors host Leland at Monterey Peninsula College, 7 p.m. Friday.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic, one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggin' Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and will return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. Or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire Cornucopia Landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or a consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
Robbins Jewelry in Carmel is open every day for your holiday and gift shopping. Robbins Jewelry is one of a kind, unique, and stylish. She uses sterling silver and semi-precious stones and will customize a keepsake right there on the spot. Robin is a native Carmel artist and silversmith. She's located inside the Dowd Craft Studio at Ocean and San Carlos. Robin has a big selection of organic bling. Great jewelry that's affordable. With free engraving and gift wrapping, go to Robbins Jewelry in Carmel.
live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We've got lines open for you right now in the free speed zone, and it's toll-free. Yeah, I pay for the call. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And should you prefer, you can email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. Into the hour, and every week we check in at the Post Times Sun Dispatch to get the news that appears nowhere else in the media. There may be a reason. That's right. You can get the news that's available nowhere else, not even in the New York Post, at ptsd1.blogspot.com. That's the Post Times Sun Dispatch. ptsd1.blogspot.com. And proprietor R.J. Shulman returns to our program today. R.J., how are you? Do I have you there, R.J.? Oh, I think RJ's trying to call us somewhere. Oh, he's on. Well, which line? Which line do you have him on, Nick? Okay, we lost RJ, and we're going to get him back here on the line in just a moment. He is quite a reporter who brings us news that, like I say, you can get nowhere else. And somehow I managed to hang up on him. And where is he now, Nick? Okay, well, we'll wait a couple of minutes and get to RJ. But first, Catherine from Monterey is on the line, and we're going to give her a listen. Hi, Catherine, how are you?
How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Well, you know, I've listened to all the commentary, and I agree with what your guest said about what we should do instead of helping Detroit, because there's such a corrupt example of crony capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't understand, nobody has been able to explain to me, is how it is that whatever the White House wants is what the Congress does. You know, they've come out and said through Dana Perino that the White House wasn't going to support a bailout for or any kind of assistance financially for the big three. And so that's what the Congress does.
Well, first of all, the whole thing's a mess, and there's nobody really with clean hands except a handful of people who voted against the original Paulson bailout. And so it's kind of hard to sort all this out and figure out who's responsible. But for me, it starts with the Bush administration, the policies that they have employed with huge tax cuts and large spending on the war that's off the books. They've run up huge deficits. The trade deficit has been out of control for years. So enter the oil companies with their greed, and they pushed the cost of oil and gasoline at the pump well past the brink of forcing the world into a recession. Now, this is something that we could see coming. Once the oil prices started to escalate and we saw crude go up over $100 a barrel, it's very clear that the world economy was going to have a hard time absorbing that shock. And so Detroit was not prepared for it because they are still building low-mileage vehicles like SUVs. And it was only in June that General Motors decided to scrap a plan for a whole new line of Suburbans and Chevy Tahoes. I mean, it's hard to imagine that they didn't get the message sooner than that. And they claim that, well, gosh, that's what consumers want. We make some cars that get 30 or 40 miles to the gallon, but they buy the big gas guzzlers. Well, that's only half the story. Because John Dingell, who we've been talking about, the dean of the House, who is a Michigan Detroit congressman whose wife works for General Motors, he is one of the lead people, along with Carl Levin, who's otherwise a great legislator, who have... protected Detroit and rebuffed efforts to raise the mileage standards, rebuffed efforts to kill the tax break that makes SUVs so profitable for the manufacturers.
Exactly.
And so, you know, we can't just look at this as something that cropped up in the last 60 days. It has been building for a long time. And fundamentally, I believe that, the bailout, the Band-Aid, won't really do much good. They'll burn through the cash, and they'll be right back either for more money or they'll be heading into bankruptcy where they will gut the labor contracts, gut their commitment to retirees on pension and health care. And so I think we got to bite the bullet. And this is the pivot point where we need to move to the green economy. And I'm willing to do it by guaranteeing jobs to everybody in the auto industry, right down to the mechanics at the car dealerships that are closing. And let's retrain them. Let's give them work to build solar farms and wind farms and the other technologies that are on the cutting edge that, with some cash and a lot of work, can really take us forward and start to achieve the goal we've articulated, which is to cut back our dependence not only on foreign oil, but on oil in general. And until we confront that reality, I just fear that the bailout is a total waste of money and a fig leaf. And I'm sorry to see the UAW and other unions drawn into this. I understand their desire to protect their workers, and that's their first mission. But we have to look beyond that and really look at the overall interests of the American public and our nation. And on that view, on that basis, I just can't find a way to justify bailing out these failed businessmen.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. And you know, this is an industry that has systematically squelched any developments in technology that would get us away from this big consumption of oil.
Yeah, you're right. They killed the electric car. Now there's a Chevy Volt, a plug-in hybrid that they're promising to us, but they keep delaying it. It's going to be costly. And today, Nissan announced that they will have a plug-in electric going on the market next fall for the 2010 model year. And so, once again, Detroit is getting skunked, and we're being asked, out of national pride and, concern for the labor force, to fork over this money. But there is no guarantee that the money will actually benefit the workers beyond, you know, the short term of keeping their paychecks coming. And I believe that we're in a very dire economic crisis, and that we're going to run out of money, or we're going to run into a huge inflationary spiral by printing more money that isn't properly backed by assets in our nation. So this is a critical point, and the Bush administration is useless. They are trying to duck out of any blame for all of the messes that they've created, and they're pointing a finger at Congress saying, well, hey, it's their fault, when they've said that they would veto almost any package that came out of Capitol Hill to bail out Detroit right now. So it's a shameful, cynical game that's being played, and I'm sorry that the auto workers are really the victims, ready to be plucked once again.
Exactly.
Anything else you want to add? I did a lot of talking there.
About the diesel issue, you know, Congress never lifted a finger when the gas prices were going through the roof, and they could have done several different things, like with the inserting the petroleum in the energy bill, and that would have reduced gas prices for the American consumer. And they could have done probably other things to stop the speculation in the commodities market for petroleum and so on and so forth. And the same is true about diesel. You know, there's no reason why diesel should be more expensive than high-tech gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't do a thing about that.
Yeah.
And that would be one area where we could immediately help all of our truckers on the road,
mm-hmm.
and bring down the price of food. You know, it seems like, what do we pay them $157,000 a year for, and guarantee them their pensions fully vested after 5 years?
Now, who gets the $157,000?
Oh, I think that's what the annual salary is for the congresspeople.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's in that range. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Catherine, thank you very much. Good call. I appreciate your comments today. And we're going to try RJ, take two.
Trash.com.
R. R.J. Shulman from the Post-Times Sun-Dispatch. Do you read me?
Yes, I do, Peter B. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, and I read you every week. Well, the Post-Times Sun-Dispatch once again has the news available nowhere else. And first up, you have the scoop on a presidential injury to W?
Yeah, that's right. This is was a big secret, but it's coming out now. As a matter of fact, George W. Bush has admitted that he was severely injured in 2003 when he was opening up a can of whoop-ass.
Really?
Yeah, we have a quote here. It says, this is President Bush, "I was cranking this can opener on this big old giant can of whoop-ass and speechifying to the American people. One minute I was saying, bring it on, and the next minute I cut a deep cut in my hand."
Wow. And a White House aide goes on to say the wound was so deep that the president bled everywhere. He got blood all over the economy and the Constitution. We were able to save his hand, but I'm not sure we were able to salvage the economy or the Bill of Rights. Wow.
Yeah, that's right. And this is where all of the problems have stemmed from that we're dealing with right now. But this was a big secret until just now.
So wait a minute. There's a series of these incidents where Bush injured himself opening
yeah.
whoop-ass?
Yeah, that was the worst. But when he said he cut himself on a can of whoop-ass when he said Osama bin Laden wanted dead or alive. And then again when he said mission accomplished, he also had a problem with that.
Wow. Was there whoop-ass on the aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln when he landed or pretended to land that plane with a big codpiece in his crotch?
Well, that's the mission accomplished whoop-ass problem that he had. So.
Well, was that actually a can of whoop-ass where I thought it was a codpiece?
Actually, you are correct. And
wow.
That is very astute of you, Peter B.
Well, I knew there was bulge in there, but now we know why.
Yeah, he was hiding that can that was only partially and improperly open.
Now, on our program this week, we have been relentless about Joe Lieberman, and we're ashamed of the way the Democrats let him off the hook. And maybe Barack Obama's the wise man here who is setting Lieberman up for some loyalty in the future by keeping him on a short leash and reminding him that he wouldn't be a chairman if Obama hadn't forgiven him for his quisling behavior in supporting McCain and Palin, and not only supporting them, but actively campaigning and criticizing Barack Obama in some very personal and ways like questioning his patriotism. So we were disappointed that the Senate just gave him a slap on the wrist, took him off a minor subcommittee, but let him keep the gavel there at the Homeland Security and Government Oversight Committee. But you relate that there was an operation at Bethesda this week to Joe Lieberman had to go under the knife. And what was this all about?
Yeah, he did. He actually had to have his lips removed from Bush's posterior.
No.
And this took a team of very skilled doctors to do this because they said they had never seen lips that were that, closely glued to somebody's bottom.
Wow. And here's a quote from Bush. "I wouldn't have minded losing my right rear that much because that would have remained me with the left behind." And that's the book that's promised. That's the book Laura has promised to read after she finishes that one about that pet goat.
That's right. They almost lost Bush's right buttocks. They were very concerned, but it was saved.
Yeah, you got me there with that left behind. And finally, Fox TV has a deal about a special extreme makeover job.
Yeah, they're actually stole this away from ABC TV. They're going to do the extreme makeover White House edition. Put together the White House in the way that they believe that Barack Obama and his family are going to want to see this out.
And so what kind of features will be added or what kind of modifications will be made to our house?
Well, first of all, the White House won't be white anymore, according to this guy Mullins, who is the executive producer of the show. And he said here, "Does the Crayola box have just one color?" He says, "I can't give it away, but there's going to be some umber getting burnt."
Wow.
He's isn't able to say too much, but it looks like they're going to have gold lamé curtains with a lot of, quote, bling hanging from it.
And this quote from the designer, I don't know if he's gay or not, but he said this will be one fly crib on Pennsylvania Avenue. Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
So expect some big changes. number 1600.
And it's always in the fine print that you learn so much. Fox Television announced that the no-bid contract to renovate the White House was awarded to Halliburton by Senator Ted Stevens. It's amazing how those things work in Washington. Well, RJ, thank you very much. People can read your work and your exclusive reports at ptsd1.blogspot.com. That's the Post Times Sun Dispatch. Hey, and RJ, can you run down a rumor for me and maybe report back after Thanksgiving? I heard that the rock band Y&T is going to reunite to play at Obama's inaugural ball. Is that true, or can you track it down?
That might be true. Actually, I did see them a few weeks ago, and they were hot.
Really?
They're doing great. So we might just see some heavy metal at the White House.
All right. Well, that'd be cool. Thank you, RJ.
All right. Talk to you later.
We're going to take a break and return to more of your phone calls. The Free Speech Zone is underway here on the Peter B. Collins Show. My number is 888-5 Peter B.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on West Blanco Road at West Ellisall Street, there is a disabled vehicle in the right turn lane. We have another traffic hazard on County Road G16 at Garland Ranch Regional Park. Two pedestrians are in the roadway. And weather, Monterey is 58 degrees right now, Salinas is 59, and Santa Cruz is 61 degrees. Tonight will be partly cloudy with lows in the 40s. Friday will be partly cloudy with highs in the 60s and lows in the 40s. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a great evening and stay tuned to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
The holidays can be a time of hope and connection, and can bring opportunities to spend more time with friends and family. For some, this can be the most difficult time of the year. This year, think of the true spirit of the holidays and consider giving the gift of a renewed connection with someone you care about. I'm Mark LaCluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Santa Claus and Dr. Chaim Barton. I can work with you and your loved ones to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection this holiday season. I still have a few spaces left and would love to help. Please call one of our elves for an appointment. 831-818-4033. That's area code 831-818-4033.
KRXA is the radio home of Central Coast Sports. Join us this fall as KRXA 540 brings you the high school football game of the week. Hi, this is Rob Ponce. Join John Berlin and me each weekend as we bring you the play-by-play of the high school football game of the week.
This Friday at 7 p.m., join us for the first round of CCS playoffs in high school football as the Monterey Toreadors host Leland at Monterey Peninsula College. 7 p.m. Friday.
We're in the home stretch here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And if you're one of our weekend listeners, I'd appreciate your feedback. You can drop me a note, peter@peterbcollins.com. And if you go to the website, check out the tab, you can help. If you can, I'm much obliged. And I know some people don't have access to the internets, so you can write me at Post Office Box 100,
Mill Valley, California, 94942. It's easy. Box 100, Mill Valley, California, and the zip is 94942. Love to hear from you. Appreciate all your support in every way you show it. And as I mentioned, we do have a big announcement coming on Monday about an exciting new affiliate for the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm looking forward to sharing that with you. Now to Peter V., one of our longtime loyal listeners from Salinas. Hello, Peter.
Good afternoon, Mr. Collins.
How you doing today?
Good, thank you. If I could take a moment to trouble you with my suggestions for our President-elect Obama's cabinet choices.
As long as you drop this politeness and just deliver the goods.
I will. Secretary of Education, Bill Nye, the science guy. Secretary of State, Don Cheadle. Secretary of Defense, Scott Ritter. Counsel to the President, Michael Ratner.
Ooh, great.
Attorney General, of course, Melanie Sloan.
Nice.
Secretary of Interior, Matt Gonzalez.
Nice.
Chief of Staff, Marjorie Cohen. And Press Secretary, Billy Sunshine.
Oh, that would be excellent. He wouldn't even need a microphone.
Billy is our beacon of, again, belligerence that we so deserve right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Peter, can you forward those nominations to, I think it's, there's a website, is it change.com? There's a website for people to give their input to the Obama transition team. And I've been there once, but I can't remember the URL right now. So ask the Googles and send that information to Washington. It's very valuable.
I'll get it on the Internet as soon as I can, Peter. Thank you.
All right, Peter. Good to hear from you. Now to Robert in Daly City. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hey, I really love listening to you on Air America in the morning, and I'm going to listen again tomorrow, Friday morning.
Well, thank you, and let's just not confuse our weekend listeners. Some people hear the show on Saturday and Sunday, and this past week I've been doing double duty, subbing for Lionel on Air America. That's a show that's mostly heard on the Eastern Seaboard, doesn't really penetrate to the West so much, and we've been having a good time there. It's early for Californians, though. We start at 6 a.m., and that explains why I've been a little droopy here in the afternoons, but it's been a fun run, and I always hook up with a lot of new people when I fill in on other people's shows. It's fascinating. And let me just share one with you, Robert, because there's a guy listening in Lansing, Michigan. He works at a radio station there, and he was listening to me the other day. And, you know, when I do a remote broadcast like this, there are a lot of surprises. For example, when the bumper music comes out of a break, they pick that in New York most of the time, and I don't really know what's coming.
Yeah.
And so the other day, they loaded up a Bob Seger song. And Kevin in Lansing wrote, "Peter, I laughed out loud in my truck when you asked the board operator to fade out Bob Seger. I'm also sick of him, and it seems like half the stations here in Michigan play him every hour. We air against the wind on one of our stations. He makes this annoying nasal noise near the end. I believe it's one of the most irritating sounds ever made by a human in a song." So he captured my comment. We'll play that for you. And then he went to the trouble of stringing together a bunch of nasal intonations from Bob Seger. We'll play that for you next.
Oh, Peter.
Oh, that's the irritating Bob Seger sound. I'm sorry, I queued up the wrong piece. And the one I need here is Peter hates Bob Seger. Let me type that in. P-E-T-E-R. And hates. There it is. Okay, now we can get iTunes to play this for us. Here we go. So this is coming back from a break on the Lionel Show the other day.
I was a little too tall, could have used a few pounds.
Tight it's the Lionel Show. Justin, can you dump that? I hate Bob Seger. I'm sorry. I got tired of Bob Seger. I was a rock DJ in the 1980s. And we played his music to death, and every song sounded like the one just before. I'm Peter B. Collins, and if you love Bob Seger, well, I'm sorry. You can send me an email, full of it, at peterbcollins.com. And nobody did, except Kevin, who captured the tape and seemed to enjoy it. So there I go, offending Bob Seger fans and I guess other people up and down the East Coast. And, Robert, thanks for getting up early to enjoy my other experience.
Well, Peter, you're one of my most favorite progressive professional talkers, you and Jeff Ferris. And I what I like about you is that you go after issues like 9/11 and talk the truth.
Well, I do what I can, and I just tell it the way I see it. And I'm glad that you find it interesting, Robert.
More power to you. More power to you.
All right. Thanks for checking in today. Really appreciate that. And Robert's called in a couple of times over at Air America. And if you want to do so, too, feel free. Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Peter B. Collins Show. Drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com, or you know the other one, full of it.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together?
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works. Does yours?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Yet another market meltdown. Stocks went into a dive in the final hour of trading, and the Dow closed 444 points lower at 7552. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason reports.
With the latest stock sell-off, all three major indexes are now down more than 43% for the year. The NASDAQ has been cut in half, and the S&P 500 hit an 11-year low today.
Realistically, a lot of these stocks are hitting lows we haven't seen, I mean, in my lifetime.
Citigroup, which crumbled 26% today, was one of the biggest losers. Even after a Saudi prince upped his stake in the financial giant, the stock fell below $5. The total value of Citigroup's outstanding shares is now almost equal to the $25 billion in bailout money the Treasury just pumped into the bank.
Congressional leaders say they're willing to pump money into U.S. auto companies if they can show they'll use it wisely and restructure their businesses. CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson has that.
Best Congress was willing to offer was a chance for automakers to submit a plan for consideration by December 2nd, their last hope for help before the new year.
Inaction is simply not an option.
Ford has said it's now burning through $1 billion a month. GM, the biggest of the automakers at issue and the closest to collapse, has been losing just as much. And GM told Congress it might need $4 to $5 billion a month to keep running until April.
Help may be needed, but as one senator told me, it doesn't do any good if we just give them a bigger bucket to bail.
The industry's plans will be considered before the end of the year. Rahm Emanuel has a reputation as a highly partisan Democrat, but as Barack Obama's choice for White House chief of staff, he brought an olive branch to Capitol Hill today.
Problems we face are of a serious magnitude that there is enough area and enough goodwill for ideas from both parties to solve those challenges.
He met with Republican leaders in the House and Senate. Mr. Obama's campaign fundraiser, Chicago businesswoman Penny Pritzker, was said to be his top choice for Commerce Secretary, but she took herself out of the running today. Reportedly, Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano is likely to be nominated for Homeland